Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is the perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through. The death. We are soldiers, we are soldiers.
Coming to Bard's Logic Political Talk, part of the growing conservative conversation, and part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And we're also, you can find the Patriot Journalist Network on the Facebook page. Just go to the search engine and put in Patriot Journalist Network as one word, and then you'll find this show as well as other shows such as Mark Prasik's Full Armor Show, which you can find Monday through Friday evenings from 8 p.m. until midnight, and that's Eastern Time. And tonight we are going to, oh yeah, first I want to thank everyone for coming in tonight, whether you are coming and listening from the Bard's Logic Political Talk website, or if you are coming listening through Blog Talk Radio. Thank you very much, or some of the other venues that you can listen to the show. So tonight we are going to be continuing our discussion on QE3, China, the Middle East conflict, the New World Order, and the debates. And we will analyze how America has gotten to this point historically and where we are going. And some of the topics we will discuss are the presidential candidates, what was not said during the debates, and the China trade deals around the world that will no longer use the U.S. dollar and its trading currency, and of course there will be more discussion, more topics. But first I would like to start off by letting in one of our panelists, and he is has a book. He's also an author of The Hidden Fourth Branch, and without further ado, I will be bringing in Kelly Mordecai with an important announcement. Go ahead, Kelly.
Oh, thanks, Robert. It's always good to hear your show. Is Chris there too?
I do not see him yet. Oh, there he is. I guess I will go ahead and open up his mic as well. There you go, Chris. Your mic is live, and I've got our other panelist on here, which is Helen Mordecai.
Well, good. Well, hey, I just want to say hey to Chris and QE3. Oh, my gosh, you guys are going to have a really good show. I'll put some inflation charts in my book. Maybe I should get them on my website so you guys can see them. Everybody that sees these really wants these, and I'm like, no, you got to buy the book. But I think I'll put it on my website. It's tied to historical events why we're going to be suffering horrible inflation. That Republican guy, Nixon, 73, took us off the gold standard. The Keynesian theory guy, or he was convinced anyway, every country that's went Keynesian theories has basically suffered terribly, ultimately. Anyway, but you guys are going to have a good show and really listen, but I want to give an update. That's why I've been kind of missing lately. Of course, I had some making money in Santa Cruz, but the other one, yesterday I submitted a complaint to the California Siskiyou County Civil Grand Jury asking the grand jury to walk into the county elections clerk the day after the election, walk in and start counting paper ballots. The reason why I asked them that is because there are a lot of concerns with the electronic machines. Are they reporting accurately? Are they reporting truly? And I don't want to go into it, how horrifying this potential and some other results I've actually seen. But Californians, there's a complaint you can actually download off the website, hiddenfourthbranch.com, on page 90. You can download this complaint, and you can turn it over into your county civil grand jury. And I've made it really simple. You don't have to count the whole. You pick one precinct, the largest precinct. You only have to count about 60% of the paper ballots and then compare it to the electronic machines. And within the last couple of days, I've got confirmed other complaints submitted. L.A. County, Sacramento County, we've got commitments from El Dorado County, Riverside. We're probably going to get one from Santa Cruz County as well. San Jose, they're interested as well. I'm trying to get other contacts. We got 58 counties. And so I'm encouraging people that, hey, if you're concerned about electronic election fraud, there is a way to monitor this using the grand jury, and that's what I did yesterday by submitting a complaint to the civil grand jury. And we might have an honest election here. I have evidence that indicates that Mitt Romney stole votes from not just Ron Paul, but also Gingrich and Santorum. It's kind of spooky, the data I've seen. There's also, kind of around the website, there's a testimony from Clinton Curtis. He was a computer programmer working for Yang Enterprises in Florida. As the employee there, he was in meetings with a U.S. Representative who was going to try to win the election. The firm he was working for was asked to program the election results to a 51-49 outcome. And Clinton Curtis testified over this in a legislative hearing, and it's just kind of spooky. There's other YouTube videos you can find. But this is something we can do, and I made it really simple. Just go to the Hidden Fourth Branch website, click 9-0, General Election Voting Machine Accountability. You can download the complaint, edit it for your county, and turn it in to the civil grand jury of your county if you're in California. Oregon, you can do the same, but other states, it's a little bit more tricky. So,
Kelly?
Yeah?
Can you, you know, like I'm on your site right now and you got like a whole slew of crap on here. Can you maybe click on that and get us to the actual page or tell me where to find that thing you said to find so I can
put it in the chat? Yeah, it's on page 9-0. Look at the numbers, 1, 2, 3, 8, 9, 9-0. Like book them down, 0-9-0. It's right there. I put it on Robert's
General Election Voting Machine Accountability.
Yep, that's the one.
Okay, all right. I'll put that in chat, and I'll put it on my group.
Yeah, that's real helpful. Well, yeah, it's on Robert's Facebook, too.
Now, let me ask you a question. You were talking about that guy who ran the mathematical formulas. I've actually seen some of that stuff before in the primary. Is that the guy you're talking about, guys who ran it to show that there's no way that they could have come up with the numbers they come up with?
Which expert are you talking about? There is Francois Choquette. He's Southern Cal. He's an aerospace engineer out of work. I wonder why. And I mean, I'm saying that in jest of our economy, but he's been running this during the primaries, and he wrote a killer affidavit that went into the class action lawsuit against the Republicans. And so that's one analysis. Richard Charnin is a mathematician, endless list of degrees. He has done this for years. And in one election, he said, this is mathematically impossible. What happened? Of course, the conclusion is if you electronically tinker with the vote, it explains this. There was the South Carolina situation, the primary from the Columbia County, South Carolina. It looks like Ron Paul actually got a very strong second behind Gingrich. However, it was flipped, and that's actually in the document. You can see it. But Romney and Ron Paul's votes were flipped. In other words, you think you were voting for Ron Paul? What happened was the votes were going for Romney.
Mm-hmm.
So it's ironic. If Ron Paul runs again, everybody should vote for Mitt Romney, and then Ron Paul will win. but anyway, I'm with a group called Watch the Vote. We have seen this in other stories.
That's what I was going to ask you. Right.
Yeah, you can hook up with us on Facebook, Watch the Vote 2012, and you can learn that there is a bunch of people on this. Occupy rigged elections, of course, they're a little bit more liberal, but they see these problems too. And one of the points I want to make is that if we go third party, which I talk with people today, just at a round table buffet, then I'll say, I'm going third party. I'm just done with this elf and donkey thing. Anyway, if they can continue to do electronic election fraud and switching, we will never see a third party emerge. And I know some listeners here are going to be in shock over what I'm expressing, but it greatly concerns me. The Europeans figured it out, and they got rid of their machines, a number of countries. And my heart would not allow my mind to believe this was really happening until enough stark evidence was in my face.
Mm-hmm.
And it was shocking. And it's an easy way for Californians to hold their machines accountable is when the grand jury walks in the next day, starts counting ballots.
What's the chances of this happening this late in the game?
Well, we have 19 days left. What happens is the grand jury foreman will take the complaint. You know, it's the first two pages explain everything, and it's so simple. Hey, go in and just count them. So the grand jury foreman will take the complaint. If he likes it, which the response they got in the primaries was they really liked it, they just didn't seem to have enough money to do it, but I've simplified the approach. So the grand jury foreman will just hand it to a three-person committee, and if they go ahead and take it up, the three of them will just walk over and pick a large precinct and start counting.
Why did it take this long to get this out?
I've been busy with many other things.
Okay, but what about Watch the Vote? I mean, they've been at this thing for quite a while, if I remember right.
Well, somebody has been very, very busy trying to make money and survive. I basically wrote the complaint. I finally just got on it and got her out. We have 19 days, so.
But what happens? Let's say, is there any chance for states, you know, for people who don't get on this in time after the election? I mean, you know, is there a chance of follow up on this stuff?
Well, absolutely. You can submit it after the election.
Okay.
I mean, let me tell you a specific story about a poll judge, a precinct judge. Her name is Anna Beckett. Some of you might know that name. She's in Austin, Texas, precinct 247. She noticed from people volunteering who they were voting for that Ron Paul had basically 70% of the vote in her precinct. When the official results came out, Ron Paul had like 10 or 12%. She's like, no, that's completely wrong. When people would check in and I'd say Republican or Democrat, they'd say the Ron Paul party. Or, well, I am a Democrat, but I'm voting for Ron Paul today. Don't tell my mom. She had a whole bunch of people that say this, and she was estimating it should have been at least two-thirds Ron Paul. The other problem with her precinct was they have the numbers that she saw over 200 people come in. They have ticker tapes, number one, number two, you go to your touchscreen, number one, number two, number three, you count them up. Well, over 200 people voted. The official results indicated in her precinct that day that only 105 people voted. She was like, wait. So she called up the county election clerk and said, hey, look, you know, I saw this Ron Paul and reports this. Number two, I saw well over 200 people, and you're only saying 101. What's going on here? Well, now she's under prosecution by the DA and county election clerk. She's basically being a whistleblower, and they're coming after her. So, and there's more to it than that. But another problem in Ron Paul's own county, this is what Francois Choquette discovered. In Ron Paul's own county, I can't name it, but it's in Texas, his last election as a U.S. House of Representatives, he got 92%. Of course, they love him. And somehow he only got 10% in the presidential election. You see where I'm going?
The primary or the 2008 presidential? Okay.
In the 2010 re-election for Congress, he got 92%. In 2012 primary, he only got 10% from his home county. I mean, this is a joke, guys.
How many states do you have listed out that show these discrepancies against him?
How many?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh, this is horrifying. If you want to go there, Iowa was a disaster. Maine was even worse. Let's see, we got Maine, we got Nevada, something is horrifyingly fishy there.
Yeah.
If you combine the conventions, things are looking suspicious there. There's been some other teams investigating this. What else? Louisiana was a disaster, was a mess. Missouri, the GOP arrested some people during the county convention. In Maryland, a precinct judge in Annapolis personally knew 50 people who were going to vote for Ron Paul, and he only got like 9 votes. And there was over 500 people at the precinct voting. And the big thing I'm seeing, too, is Democrats are coming on over for Ron Paul.
Sure.
I mean, it's disgusting what's happening.
other states?
Other states, yeah. The South Carolina data analysis showed something suspicious. From Francois's data, the winner of Ohio is actually Santorum, not Romney. It's in the complaint. You can see this data. He signed an affidavit to this. I mean, if the Republicans are cheating their own, they cheated. Data indicates they cheated not just Ron Paul, but also Santorum and Gingrich both. These machines. And so the challenge to finding out evidence is, well, you could sue in court. The problem with that, some of these cases take
money.
2 or 4 years.
Time and money.
Time and money. And then you got the other problem is the Supreme Court, a election fraud problem went to the Supreme Court. People wanted a subpoena to look at the computer code. The Supreme Court says we cannot let you have that because that's protected under intellectual property as a patent right.
I would think that people would just that statement alone, Kelly, people would go, this has got to go. There's no way in the world I would trust this. Every human being in America who owns, I mean, my house has 2, 4, 5 computers in it. We all live in the world of fraud. We all protect ourselves from it. We don't trust the Internet. We all have security. Everybody's, you know, paranoid of, you know, losing your personal information. We get, you know, we hear cases all the time of, you know, the government being hacked, banks being hacked, insurance companies being hacked for data, you know, WikiLeaks. I mean, come on. I mean, the average human being has got to know that these machines, there needs to be some kind of better marketing to get the question out. Do you trust the people who control these machines to deliver your election results? Because if you get enough people that say no more, because you've got to get people, you know, like you said, you file a suit 2 to 4 years later, time, money, you know, all these kind of things. You know, this all started in the Obama. Well, actually, there was even the issues with Florida with the Bush Gore election, but it came up again in the Obama election, and now we are, you know, 4 years later, people are much more techno savvy, internet savvy, information. You know what I'm saying? And there's got to be a point where people can really consolidate this message and get it out.
Well, yeah, it's the message is one thing. The other is, what can we do about it? And that's why I've devised this complaint, asking a grand jury to walk into the election clerk's office, grab ballots, start counting. And they typically go for the, if you're going to commit election fraud, this is a couple sources, you go for the large precincts because it's high reward and low risk. In small precincts, it's low reward and it's high risk. You know, everybody knows everybody. So that's what they do, and that's what this is focused on. And so for other states, people are asking, and it's been going several places on Facebook today, of course, people are asking, can this be done in other states? And the answer is yes. It's just the complaint will take more time because the district attorneys will sometimes play gatekeeper games, whereas mm-hmm. I'm not going to submit this. And they have chosen to obstruct a First Amendment right. It's called the Petition for Redress of Grievance. And that has its origin in C-61 of the Magna Carta, where a citizen can go write a petition. And this petition right was even cited in Alderson versus Florida, a 2011 case, where the judge said, you know, it came for C-61 of the Magna Carta, the right to petition is an absolute right. The court has spoken many times. But it's more interesting to note the same section at which the right to petition came from also tells us who the petition goes to, which is the grand jury. And district attorneys have blocked this because, I don't know this, because we haven't heard anything back from other states and their county grand juries. We had over 400 complaints downloaded nationwide for the primaries. The DA might just be too busy and forget about it, or he might choose to do, to just, now I'm not getting into the grand jury. It's not your decision.
You're saying there's 400 complaints right now?
For the primary, there was 400 complaints downloaded nationwide. It's up to 500 after the primaries, but people are real interested in finding out. But we haven't heard anything back from the other states. We did hear from grand juries in the California counties, but the primary approach is more difficult and more timely, so I made it more simple for the general election. But the other states, another expert, William Windsor, has indicated that the district attorneys play gatekeepers when that is not their position, and they have essentially obstructed our First Amendment right, a petition for redress of grievance. The choice to take up the complaint or not is in the hands of the grand jury and not the DA. So I have to prepare a longer complaint to break through that crap.
Our system's really screwed up, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, if you had the fox that guards the hen house and his buddy, another fox, is choosing to not to submit the complaint to the barnyard animals, would there be any accountability?
And I'd have to say no on that.
Yeah, I know. I didn't mean to complicate a simple farm thing, but, you know. What kind of attorney would the fox that guards the hen house want? Well, a defense attorney would be, of course, another fox. What kind of district attorney would the fox, the guards, the hen house want? Another fox. If that fox never presents a complaint to the barnyard animals or the grand jury of the barnyard animals, there will never be an indictment.
Well, let me ask you this question. How many district attorneys end up in politics?
An awful lot. It's a stepping stone. How many senators in the U.S. House of Representatives are attorneys?
Oh, yeah.
The Senate, actually. The Senate has an awful lot of attorneys. It's, you know, they're like the motley crew, the majority in the Senate. Anyway, I just wanted to encourage Californians and even other people in other states, if they want to do this, they can download the California complaint just for reading and preparation for when I get the other states' complaints ready.
How is, with all the write-in, you know, the write-in environments and Gilbert's lawsuit and what Count the Vote is working on, what you're working on, how much attention is being brought to take us back to, you know, legitimate paper counted ballots?
I'm not sure. See, what's hard, it's so damn hard to catch these jokers.
Well, when you protect the damn code and you can't investigate it, you've seen, I'm sure all of us have seen the videos, including the guy back years ago that testified before the frickin' House or Senate, you know, before a commission.
Chris Curtis. Yeah.
Remember him? He stood up there and said, oh, it's absolutely, you know, it's simple to write the code to change this, to control it. You know, and then that one video that came out in the primary where a guy, a precinct guy who had dealt with elections forever, had a guy come in and play with the card and had 5, 6, 7 people right there in the office do their vote and get the results. Remember that video? It was shocking.
Yeah,
there was a woman.
Yeah.
A woman was crying. You know,
yeah,
that's a revelation of the crime.
Yeah, that was Ian Sanchez, the county election clerk of Lee County, Florida. He discussed the county problem, and he started out saying, I never thought this was possible until somebody showed me. This is part of the movie Hacking Democracy. You can see it on YouTube. Bev Harris did it. This was actually on HBO a couple times. This is unbelievable, the potential. And, you know, I found ways to gently explain this to my county elections clerk, and she was suffering a terrible paradigm shift. I could see it in her face. All the hard work she had done, and I know some really great poll workers, too. all the hard work they've done, all the integrity they've had to do, and all the training, and then you have a big flurry of activity, the night of the election, all to come to find out somebody can tamper by a computer.
It just surprises me that people don't think computers can't be tampered with. That just blows me away. You know what I mean? They just think these people are honest, that elections are honest. Heck, I don't know if you remember, but we interviewed Tom Vaughn, who was the guy running for the Constitution Party for Las Vegas, that new district in Nevada. And he said that, because he did all this research and has actually written books around the Lincoln era, and he said they actually found, like 100 years later, like rooms full of boxes of ballots that had never been counted. I mean, physical evidence, like 100 years later. I mean,
this vote tampering has been happening for centuries. In the 1800s, the African-American people to vote, so they were basically destroying their vote, or they were adding votes to dilute the vote. That was a Supreme Court case discussed that, but they were basically, you got 100 blacks here, and you got 50 white people that voted, so let's just add another 200 white votes into the ballot box, ballot stuffing. This has gone on since our republic was founded.
Yeah, that's what I learned. Are people going to wake up? Do you see it out there in your work?
I was talking with someone today, and he said the American people are sheep. I said, no, they're not. They are not stupid. They feel helpless. They feel helpless that there's nothing they can do. They watch the news. Oh, well, give me my beer, Monday Night Football. But I believe when you empower the American people with tools and knowledge, I believe they will act.
Yeah, I mean, I keep saying this. I think we need another, party movement that we've seen. And, gentlemen, I'm going to have to take this call. I actually have important I have to answer. Hold on. It's Jim Clymer, actually. Hold on.
Cool. So, did you see the... Kelly, did you see the video from Democracy Now where they had three of the third-party candidates come on and answer? They actually played, the portion of the question and the responses from Obama and Romney. And then they had Stein and Rocky Anderson used to be the mayor, and Virgil Goode give their responses to the question from the debate. Have you seen that yet?
No, I've been too busy. I would have loved to, though. I'm looking forward to the debate on the 23rd. I guess they had to move the location because a bunch of people, they can't fit them all.
Good. That's a good sign. I'll find the – I've actually been breaking down the transcribing the conversations and stuff, just to kind of get it. I don't know, that's how I embed stuff in my mind, but I'm about halfway through it. Just kind of forces you to really get it, to go back through and type stuff out and have to replay and rewind and play it again to finish getting the sentence right. When you're done, it's almost totally memorized. I will find the link and throw it in your chat so you don't have to search for it because, stuff gets knocked down the page. So you can watch it when you get a chance.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I this is exciting that even people I know, they're just like, one guy I was talking to him last night, he's like, I can't vote Republican. I'm not sure about it. I think I'm going to vote for Obama. I said, look, he's going to slam dunk win California. Go to third party. He's like, oh, his eyes brighten. It's like, yeah, let's do that. It's exciting to see a third party rising here, or a couple. We've got, I know, 2016, some libertarians are talking, Gary Johnson in 2016. But the mass media growth from the Internet is going to be a huge shift in the way political business is done. It's exciting to see this, and of course, you and Robert are on the forefront of this.
Well, it is exciting. I think it's overwhelming to people because there's their paradigm of
hello, folks.
The fear of Obama, you know, really has played out strong. They played that. They've been programming that into our minds for the last 2 years. You know, ever since, well, actually for the last 4 years. But, you know, since the House has sat there and done nothing, you know, to block Obama, they just let all this stuff build up, you know, and then just market against that. So the fear of Obama has been embedded into Republicans for 4 years now. And that's quite a paradigm to break through. But I see it happening, and I see the beginnings of it. We're already discussing, you know, what's the next step? Well, obviously the next step is the midterms, 2014. And I would assume, I haven't talked to the Libertarian Party, but I have the Constitution Party. But for every person who doesn't win, you know, because you got 107 Constitution Party people and you have 569 Libertarian Party people running for different offices across the land right now. So that's some pretty good numbers. And I would assume, I know it, like I said, for the Constitution Party, that those people are going to get right back up if they don't win and refile and rerun for the seat in 2 years. They're staying on it. These people are on this thing to save our country. And I think that's an admirable thing. I mean, you know, it's powerful. And I believe in 2 years we're going to see an even bigger wave of people in these parties running for offices, and going into 2016, you know, there's a very real possibility a third-party candidate could win the presidency if we can get the crime out of the voting machines. You know,
if we can have
that combination, you know, the combination of some wins this time, 2014, going into 2016, you know, we actually might have a country again.
Oh, I agree. What could be bizarre is for third party looking at states, Gary Johnson could win New Mexico. He was the governor there. Ron Paul, the attorney general, has written a letter. Yes, we will count Ron Paul's write-in votes. He signed up for Maine. He might win Maine. He won the Republican nomination in both those states. Washington State, they're working on that too.
I think they got it. From what I saw, they got Washington.
Yes, no, I'm not sure if I trust Richard Gilbert enough, but anyway, we have, if it happens, we get this mix, okay? All of a sudden there's this mix. Maybe Montana might go for Virgil Gooch.
Well,
so you get all these third parties actually winning the electoral votes from states. That is going to be a shakeup of the system.
I seen something tonight briefly. They were doing some debate, House of Representative debate for the 9th District of Arizona, and there is a Libertarian, I can't recall his name, but there is a Libertarian running for the U.S. House of Representatives in Arizona's 9th District. So that's one thing I've seen tonight. He was actually part of a three-person debate. Of course, there is Republican and Democrat tonight on C-SPAN.
Well, if you look at the Libertarian Party, they have 152 existing office holders in this country. So, you know, they got some game going on there. I mean, you obviously need more than that across a country this big, but, you know, they're getting a foothold in, and with 569 people on the ballot in various positions across the country, you know, if let's say they get a third of them, you know, that party's getting a foothold in this country, and I believe that they will pull from both sides of the party, you know, the two main parties, because of their platform, because they're strong constitutionally, but, you know, they have the social liberal, you know, thing going for them, so they can pull from both sides. I would assume it'll be interesting to see, and we won't know, I would say 2-4 weeks into after November 6th, going into December and January, we're going to start to see some numbers – These guys are going to want to get out. Both these parties are going to want to get the numbers out to people on how much their ranks swell after November 6th, because I think that's where you're going to really see the numbers start to solidify. I think people are going to be so disgusted. I don't care who wins, Obama or Romney. You know, most of us believe that the powers that be are telling Obama, you got to throw this election, and because you screwed up, and you know, because it's the same controllers. So I call it the handoff election, but whatever. You know, we won't. I don't know if I'm right or wrong, but that's just my instincts. But you know, I think people are just going to be disgusted. I think people who vote for Romney are going to be disgusted with themselves. You know.
A lot of them are swallowing their principles, just, you know, in voting for Romney. I mean, I can't believe that, you know, some of the folks who are still ardently against him, you know, either they were for Ron. Well, I would say, unfortunately, there's more Newt Gingrich supporters who are now voting for Romney than Ron Paul supporters are voting for Romney.
Ron Paul, a tiny percent of Ron Paul people. And like most of Ron Paul people say, that if you vote for Romney, you were never a Ron Paul person to begin with. There's no way, you know, that Johnson will pull a big chunk of his numbers based on what I've seen. You got the write-in campaign. Some people will go to the Constitution Party, but they'll do something. They'll do anything but pull that lever for Romney. Romney is the enemy to them, period. End of report. Romney and Obama are equal to them. They get it. You don't have to explain that to them, you know. Go ahead.
Last night I was amused. I met a gentleman who's going to vote for Roseanne Barr.
I'm like,
wow.
That's great. Unbelievable.
Yeah. I'm like, great. Anything but the elephant or donkeys. I mean, come on. Yeah, actually, Roseanne Barr. Yeah,
I couldn't believe that. I can't believe that someone would actually vote for her for president. Talk about a joke. She'd be her own punchline.
Hey, you got something good to tell us, Robert?
Oh, something good to tell us?
Yeah.
Yes, on October 22nd, the Monday before the debate between. What's it, the Fair and Freedom debate between Virgil Goode and Gary Johnson?
Fair and Freedom.
What's the name of the, come on, give me a break.
I don't know, I'll never remember it now that you said that.
Yeah, Freedom, what's the name of the, I need to just look it up, I've got it here. I mean, I screwed up something. Yeah, tell me what the debate is. What's the name of that debate? The free and equal, well, see. Free and equal.
Fair.
See, I do free and something there. Well, fair, free, equal. What? Okay, that's it for tonight, folks. I'll just know. But anyway, on a serious note, enough joking around, is that on the Monday night, October 22nd, before that debate, Jim Clymer will be on Bard's Logic, and he will be answering the questions that were heard on the vice presidential debate with the Republican and the Democrats. So now we will have the opportunity to hear what the Constitution Party's vice presidential candidate, in the way he would, answer those questions.
That's awesome. Go ahead.
Well, I'm working on something else, but I it's not completely concrete, so I don't want to say.
Don't say anything. Say it when it's booked. No, this is great. Jim Clymer is brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Our interview that we did of him and Rex was on that. I remember Rex walking away going, wow, these guys absolutely will not abuse the Constitution. You know, some of the questions, I'm telling you, Kelly, I don't know if you've listened to it. It's in my file somewhere. You know, my problem with the files is I've got 10,000 of them. But the Clymer interview that we did, we hit him with a lot of tough questions, you know, because it was you, me, and Rex, right? And nailed him. We got deep into issues of, you know, power of the president. If Virgil wins, would you do this? Would you do that? Even the issues about, you know, the laws on the border, how would you deal with the military? that whole issue of standing army inside the United States. I mean, their position on constitutional correctness and governance is absolutely phenomenal. I mean, absolutely. The more I research these guys, the more I like them.
You know, Romney was during one of the primary debates was asked a question about the Constitution, and he kind of stands up and he goes, "Well, why don't we ask our constitutionalists?" And he put his arm to the side, pointing to Ron Paul, and laughed.
Yeah.
And he kind of fumbled through it.
Yes, and that development just happened when I had to get off the line there for a second because I called Mr. Clymer earlier today, and that was him returning
right.
the call to let me know that, you know, that we'll be doing that on Monday.
Well, we will. I've got
good news.
Yeah, it is. It's awesome. Well, And it's not, to me, it's not, you know, I'm not some, wow, this is my party guy. I'm still investigating everybody. You know what I'm saying? I'm not in love with anybody. I'm not a hero worshiper. You know, I don't follow, you know, man, I'm a very skeptical person. And when I say that, you know, that I am impressed with every human being that we have interviewed from these people, if you know my personality, that's saying a lot because I'm a skeptical mother bear, you know, and these guys are very impressive. So I'm looking forward to continually, you know, and you can hit them with the tough stuff. I mean, some deep stuff, Kelly, come on and go after them. You want to talk about
that?
He got into that jurisprudence stuff. And natural law, and it was like I'm sitting at the foot of a founding father. I mean, it was intense. Some of the conversation in that interview. So now that we know how far we can push them, we can really have some fun.
Well, let me guess.
I just read in the chat the Tex and Rex show looks like they will be having a. Debate show on Monday and Tuesday evening. I guess a post debate shows on Monday and Tuesday evening, October 22nd and October 23rd. So Monday and Tuesday are going to be two powerhouse evenings here. It's going to be a couple great nights there.
Wow. Sorry, Kelly, you were saying something?
Well, yeah, I want to guess how you felt after hearing these guys and their love of the Constitution. I'm going to guess the feeling was refreshed.
Well, for me, it wasn't just refreshed.
That's a very good description.
I don't have the background you do, Kelly. You started on this search a few years, you know, before I did. And so some of it is just being in awe, you know, just in shock of how little I really understand and how abused the Constitution is by people that we vote into power. You know, when you see Romney up there during the primary, and in fact, I have clips from him in 2008 when they were talking about the War Powers Act, and he talked about, I'll have to ask my lawyers on that one. And you want to be president of my frickin' country? You know what I'm saying? I mean, they were good at lying about Obama being a constitutional attorney, you know, that gave lectures, you know. I imagine one of these guys running. I imagine the sheriff we interviewed could waste Obama on the Constitution, you know. I mean, I guess part of it is it's awesome, but on the other part, it's almost depressing to think of how poorly our country is run. The greatest country in the history of the world, run by a bunch of thieves who have no idea what our founding, what the original intent was, what the Constitution is, and they abuse it on a daily basis as if it is almost with scorn. That is, it's an interference to the things, the wheeling and dealing and the wealth making for themselves and their buddies and their overseas handlers, you know, it's almost a scorn. And I've said this in the primary so many times to people. You don't understand. The Republicans, the people who control the RNC and the money backers behind them hate you if you're a Christian and a conservative and a constitutionalist. They despise you because you are the last political body. The left has left the Constitution decades ago. You're the last political power in this country that protects that document and that original intent. And if you bow down to these people and you throw that switch for Romney, you might as well just give it up, because you are no longer a conservative or a constitutionalist. You just give it up. Quit talking about it. Because they absolutely despise you.
Chris?
I mean, don't you get it? I get it. Do you, Kelly? Sorry.
Chris, I go back to my theory. The American people feel helpless. And if we kind of beat people, it's not going to help. But I really believe if the American people overcome the ignorance, they will act. They will become awake. We've had liberty implemented into our genetics through generations of living in this great experiment of liberty. And it comes down to something really simple, what the Constitution has done. You get to keep what you work for. You get to be rewarded for your work under a king or a noble or a baron. We're talking, you know, in the days of the 1600s, 1500s, all that stuff. You didn't have that kind of life that we have now. And those who are in power have an enormous amount of money. They have not suffered the plight of the everyday citizen in this country. They do not understand. They do not care. They've got theirs, F you, swear it on the people. And so when we want to get back, my mom and dad had, my father and mother, oh my gosh, they lived the American dream. They really did. And they had the security that things would go on the way they had. It was still the gold standard when I was born. And my dad did really well because he knew he could be rewarded for his work. And my father and mother inspired us kids by their example in the country they lived on. The four of us kids, we have a doctor, a nurse, an engineer, and a Miss Social who was a right-hand man to a $50 million investment firm. She was, you know, highly trusted, highly motivated. She believed, all four of us kids believed, that we would work very hard. And why? Because we were inspired by our parents' example that we will be rewarded for our work, and that's what the Constitution has done for us from day one until we've got this massive federal government. And right now, the young kids, they don't believe they're going to be rewarded for their work. They'll be taxed to death or regulated to death or whatever.
How about you and me and Robert?
Well, I feel like I'm spinning my wheels, but the young kids in their 20s, they eat, drink, and party. Tomorrow we die. We cannot have the dream. Our parents had a contractor friend. Both of his daughters asked independently, is the American dream gone? And that's why the youth was going crazy for Ron Paul, packing out stadiums, UCLA of all the places. You know, you think liberal California. No, they loved him. Berkeley, Chico. It was insane. Romney's rallies, not many people showed up. It was like, you know.
Yeah, you remember that video? That was a great video, wasn't it?
Yeah. So the youth are realizing, hey, something is wrong with our system. And thank God.
Yeah, I've seen that. But,
yeah.
I'm just saying no one's charged up for Romney. I mean, not really.
Right. Well, what I'm saying is, Chris, I really believe in the American people, that once they're empowered, that genetic position they have towards liberty and to be rewarded for their work will kick in. And we're going to band together, and we're going to do great things. And seeing it, it's just going to take more time.
Well, yeah, time is the factor. You know, 10 years ago, we had time. And that's the challenge. I can tell you what I find is really interesting is how, you know, Newt made that statement, this is the most important election of our lifetime. It is, and we're not doing it right. And I think that hit a lot of people. It's going to hit a lot of people, I think, coming out of the election, regardless of the results. You know, people are going to step back and go, we're in trouble. Because there isn't a human being that I've known that's going to flip a lever for Romney that's fired up about it. You know, no way. And
oh,
that's got to be,
that's
gotta
be heavy.
Yeah, well, but they're not fired up. You know what I mean? They're kind of fired up, but they're not fired up. Because they know anybody, especially comes from a Ron Paul background, Newt Gingrich background, you know, Newt said it many, many, many times. We need reform. We need to move back to the Constitution. We need to cut government. We need to solve these problems. We need to change our foreign policy because what we're doing is not working. You know, anybody who's been raised or educated by Newt or Dr. Paul knows that it isn't a matter of managing. That's all we're getting. I listen to debates. I'm breaking the last one down right now, you know, word for word. And I'm going, these guys have said nothing, nothing. There is no plan. Nothing. There is no plan for any kind of restoration or reform. Everything, including Romney, what is it? He says, I don't want to cut the government too much because it'll hurt the economy. What kind of freaking insane Republican statement is that?
Well, he's quoting Ronald Reagan there. Yeah, that was Reagan's plan. I'm saying that in jest because Ronald Reagan would be furious with Romney.
I can't believe that this guy is running in a Republican ticket.
That, Kelly.
No, I didn't want to steal Kelly's
I said after you said that, you couldn't hear a pin drop. People were like, except the inward of breath.
Yeah. I didn't want to steal Kelly's thunder. I knew he was bullshitting.
Chris knows me. See, I'll sneak in these little points, or I'll use artistic license or say things by contrast. And people are like, what? You know, like when I tell people, hey, you know what? I was at the karaoke place one night, and somebody I knew was hanging around, about four more people, and they were talking politics. And I just kind of, hey, guys, how you doing? Da, da, da. Oh, by the way, you know, socialism really works. It really does in practice. They look at me like, dude, we're going to kill you. You're probably from San Francisco. I said, no, really, here's how it works. Stalin murdered 20 million people. After that, there was plenty of food and housing to go around. See, it works.
That was more than 20. You said 200, didn't you?
Right. Well, Mao proved it again. He killed 20 to 40 million people. And, of course, plenty of food and housing to go around after that. So.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's my artistic license contrast thing.
Well, we had an interesting conversation last night, and I know you were busy doing stuff, but we keep reposting our continuing the conversation, and we still haven't continued it because we keep getting off on these incredible conversations. So last night we went an hour into recording time, just Randy.
That's true.
And Mary and Randy and Robert and I just talking about the Constitution, talking about,
mm-hmm.
you know, from the formation of the federal, you know, most people don't get this. I'm building a timeline, Kelly. You'll like this because, you know, we think a lot alike in this. Got to get it on paper. And there was this act, little known act in 1871 that actually formed a separate governance for the District of Columbia, and there's actually two constitutions, and the federal government was turned into a corporation at that point in time. I mean, people, there's just so many little subtle things in our history, and it really starts at the Civil War, you know, where all this changed, you know, from these United States to the United States, you know, those subtle little changes, and we are not educated on the truth of. Number one, nobody's educated on the original intent or how what you and I and Robert have gone over about, you know, how the Constitution was formed and the federal government was formed. You know, people just have this thought that the government's always been the government. No, the colonies built the federal government for a purpose so they could function all as individual sovereign states. But they needed kind of a central place to deal with their issues and deal with military and trade and things like that. They built it, and they controlled it. You know, the government didn't control them.
Yeah, well, here's something interesting you might think about regarding constitutions. An old-timer was telling me, I learned a lot about liberty from him and others his age, He was telling me, you know, a lot of states have had their constitutions replaced during the Civil War. And I'm like, are you full up? You know, but beep. Anyway, all right. So I started doing the research. Oh, my gosh. Wait a minute. California put together a constitution in 1849. You know, the 49ers, San Francisco 49ers, the gold miners of 49 got a constitution. They got a state. 1850, we were admitted into the Union. But wait a minute. The active constitution we're working on is 1878. What? How do you replace a whole state constitution? So I started looking into this, and a number of states have had this problem. I'm like, what? Massachusetts has had the same constitution since the beginning, but they've had all sorts of referendums and whatever. It's probably a mess, hard to deal with. But a number of states have actually had their constitutions replaced. Now, this gentleman, this elderly fellow, he said it happened during the Civil War. Lincoln did something, something.
Yep.
And I haven't confirmed that. But several of them in the 1860s did, not all of them. I'm like, what? How do you replace? I mean, do you get it passed by the people? Did the legislature do it? How do you replace? I couldn't believe it when I started researching this. Because the date on the coin does not match the date of the present operable constitution.
Yep. Well, you got to remember, I mean, you know this, but the 14th Amendment, you know. That right there was the key change, you know, from state sovereignty to centralized power, and from these to the, you know, United States. And so they probably had to go back in and rebuild it after Lincoln came in and used military force and guns to force the southern states to ratify that amendment.
Well, yeah, it's... You know, that of all the states in the South that rejoined the Union, Texas has a clause in their Constitution, the only one of the Southern states. In their Constitution, they have the right to secede upon majority vote. They get the vote passed, they're out of here. You know,
that'd be fun.
That would be real interesting. Another thing Lincoln did during the Civil War, I mean, yes, he did some good things, and there was concerns that he was concerned about the banksters, and that's why he wanted to keep the Union together. But he just kind of happened to one day send the Massachusetts militia into Maryland to arrest the state legislature so they could not vote secession. How I found this out, I'm like, what? I researched a little bit more, but I went to, just for kicks, to a Civil War reenactment in the town here I live. And there was a Union camp, and there was a Confederate. I thought, well, let's visit both sides, have a chat with them. No. And I'm like, wait a minute, Maryland? You guys were a neutral state. How come you're here? I used to live in Maryland. Yeah, we're part of the Maryland militia. I'm like, what? You guys are neutral. Now, what happened was they arrested our legislature so we wouldn't secede. A bunch of Marylanders got all ticked off, joining the South. And then after the war, or near the end of the war, one particular brigade of Marylanders said, hey, you know, we're concerned because if the South loses, we're dead. We will be killed. And we want to know if we can leave. Well, you're militia, you can leave, but just fight through those lines over there, and you're free to go. And a lot of them went up to Oregon. And there, I met a guy up close to the Oregon border. Every year, they were having an annual descendants of Maryland. They had their origin from Maryland, and they had this big picnic together. Isn't that bizarre?
Yeah, there's so much history. There's so much we don't understand. You know.
That's
hey,
true.
You know, speaking
you know,
of militia,
that's because they don't really teach history. That's because they really don't teach history in the schools any longer. And they've been probably haven't for quite some time. But you know, they really don't teach it. You know, I mean, who's got kids? You know, we look at the textbooks, and I'm like, why are they even studying this? I mean, really, it's what is the significance of them learning this, you know, in their, you know, civics class or social studies class? You know, you don't hear hardly any of this. It's just stuff for them to memorize so they can take tests, something, you know, it's something they're not really going to take with them, you know, after the school year is done.
Well, they do teach
history. Really, not much of it.
Robert, they do teach history. It's called revisionist history. And they teach the founding fathers with a bunch of racists and bigots. Oh, but wait a minute. John Adams was in the abolitionist movement. Hello?
Well, what about, who was the, not Hamilton, who was the other one, the one that that was totally against the Constitution in the first place? Kelly, help me. Not Hamilton, the other H.
Well, George Mason, he didn't sign it.
It
he helped work on it. Well, George Mason wouldn't sign it. He said, I smell a rat. But
yeah.
he wrote the Virginia Constitution, and from that he was helping as well. But here's another interesting fact of history regarding our beloved black folk who love liberty and all. Pennsylvania, under the King's rule, when they were a colony, they outlawed slavery. And King George said, hey, you can't do that. I'm the king. Of course, the King George, a lot of their whole well-being in island country depended upon trade and the slaves in all their colonies. And had we not committed a Revolutionary War, the blacks in Pennsylvania wouldn't have been free. If we were under King George reign, who knows where we... That's another piece of history.
Hey, Chris, that's Patrick
mm-hmm.
Henry.
Thank you. Why do I keep
don't
having
think
a break card on
think,
that?
Don't thank me. Thank Rex. He's the one who put it in chat.
Well, I can't. I just keep brain farting over that one, you know. Patrick Henry. Henry Rifle. Now I'll remember it. You remember that?
The Henry candy bar.
Well, that's because you're from Ohio.
Can I give a quote from Patrick Henry?
If you must.
Why do we love this trial by jury? Because it protects you from the hand of oppression cutting you off. In this I have comfort. As long as my neighbors, protect, I will have my being. He said that about trial by jury.
Well, you know, one of the things, and I know you've been really busy, but one of the things that Randy really gets into is the anti-federalist papers, because they were very, very much against what the colonies were doing in formation of that center. They just felt like this Constitution is going to turn around, bite us in the butt, and it's going to set it up for an oligarchy. I mean, what is different today? When you look at the wealth, you know, people go, they get out of college with their law degree, they get into politics, they go to the government, they stay there 20, 30 years, they come out multimillionaires. That was not in the original intent. That was not in the founding fathers' hearts in governance of this country. And you know, that law they passed about inside trading, the fact that these people do not live, they don't have the same health insurance we have. They have lifetime, you know, guaranteed benefits for their time in Congress. They vote themselves pay raises. You hear Randy get off on that issue when they were voting themselves a pay raise. They were quibbling over a 0.5% increase in benefits to, you know, active military people. You know, and here's a guy who was in the Marines for 22 and a half years. You know, you just see stuff like this. You see these guys making all these stock trades and stuff because they know legislation and laws and trade deals that are going to be opened up in other countries, and they go out and they make fortunes on it. And to think that after this long, they finally pass a bill saying, oh, no, that's not right. That shouldn't even have to be a question that's not right.
Oh, I know. Hey,
you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Hey, I got a plan. Chris, let's you and I, and a bunch of patrons, to where Robert lives in Ohio. All right, let's help them invent some device that won't sell but's necessary, some device of safety, okay? We'll get them elected in the state legislature, and then the legislation will pass, making incredible sales for Robert with the safety device, all right? And we'll all become millionaires. Then he'll go to Congress, invent another device, require the federal government for everybody to buy it, and then we'll all be gazillionaires. That's what we should do. Oh, that's right. That's the way it's set up and people are doing it. I agree, Chris. The founding fathers never intended this.
Well, here's and you're a pretty strong constitutionalist. Why did Patrick Henry oppose the Constitution? And this is just a quick answer I got. I'll do more research on it. Specifically, he opposed the necessary and proper clause of the Constitution, which he felt gave the federal government unlimited powers and would eventually lead to infringement of our civil rights. Have you heard that before?
Did he drop off? I still see him there. Maybe he was driving when, which he sometimes does while doing, while calling into the show, and maybe when
it is the necessity, and I'm looking at the necessary and proper clause, also known as the elastic clause, the basket clause, the coefficient clause, and the sweeping clause, is a provision in the Article 1 of the United States Constitution, Section 8, Clause 18. The Congress shall have power to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into and executing the foregoing powers and all other powers vested by this Constitution in the government of the United States or in any department of the office thereof. Well, no wonder he didn't like that. That's pretty basic. Oh, my God.
But one thing we did want to talk about tonight, Chris, that,
yes,
and actually it might even have been last night, but maybe it's just tonight that we want to discuss, and maybe we'll actually be able to get one thing in that we wanted to discuss tonight. Yeah, that's okay. I mean, we did have a great discussion last night. For the folks who missed it, please feel free to go and listen to the archive. There's actually an almost an extra hour worth of content after the normal 2-hour show. So even if you did make it last night, I recommend go ahead and listening to the last hour of the archive, because it's some great information. But one of the things, someone, was this you, Chris, who shared this article with the title Homeland Security Graduates First Corps of Obama's Brown Shirts, Homeland Youth.
Yep.
And it's not a very long article. And what I'll do here is I will put it in the chat, but then I will proceed to read quickly through it just because, as I said, it's not a long one, and this also to benefit the folks who are going to be listening to the show on the archive later. There's the link. Well, that's supposed to be the link.
Well, before you read this, Let me make this one statement before you read this. For
sure.
All you people who don't believe there are FEMA camps, i.e. internment camps, listen to this article.
Okay. It says, It Makes Sense blog, October 7th, 2012, Vicksburg. The federal government calls them the FEMA Corps, but they conjure up memories of the Hitler youth of the 1930s Germany. Regardless of their name, the Department of Homeland Security has just graduated its first class of 231 Homeland Youth, kids aged 18 to 24. I thought once you were 18, you were an adult. But anyway, I digress. Are recruited from the President's AmeriCorps volunteers. They represent the first wave of DHS's Youth Corps, designed specifically to create a full-time paid standing army of female youth across the country. On September 13, 2012, the Department of Homeland Security graduated its first class of FEMA Corps first responders. While the idea of having a volunteer force of tens of thousands of volunteers scattered across the country to aid in times of natural disasters sounds great, the details and timing of this new government army is somewhat curious, if not disturbing. DHS raising an armed army. The first problem one finds with this new, quote, new army is the fact that they are mere children. Yes, 18 is generally the legal age of a person can sign a contract, join the military, or be tried in as an adult, but ask any parent, an 18, 20, or even 24-year-old is still naive, readily influenced kid. The second problem with this announcement and program, it's timing. Over the past 2 years, President Obama has signed a number of executive orders suspending all civil and constitutional rights and turning over management of America under martial law to FEMA. Also in that time, domestic federal agencies under DHS, including FEMA, have ordered billions of rounds of ammunition as well as the corresponding firearms. Admittedly, these new weapons and ammunition aren't to be used in some far-off war or to fight forest fires in California, but right here on the streets of America. And then goes off a little bit to strange armored fighting vehicles. Individuals around the U.S. have begun reporting the sight of strange new heavily armed FEMA fighting vehicles. What would a disaster relief agency like FEMA need with 2,500 brand new GLS armored fighting vehicles? According to the agency, 2,500. According to the agency's own mandate, as well as the President Obama's recent executive order, the answer is population control during time of martial law. One set of images made available by Rense.com, R-E-N-S-E.com, shows trailer after trailer carrying these new DHS and FEMA-armored fighting vehicles, complete with machine gun slots. They're labeled with the usual backward American flag entitled Homeland Security. Below that is the DHS logo. It also reads, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Joining those markings, the black vehicles with white lettering also display police/rescue on one side and Special Response Team on the other. DHS and FEMA armed fighting vehicles images courtesy of Rense.com, and then another title, I guess. It says FEMA Corps. FEMA Duty Administrator Rich Serino gave the keynote address to the introduction ceremony for the inaugural class of FEMA Corps members. According to the DHS website, Corps members assist with disaster preparedness, response, and recovery activities, providing support in areas ranging from work directly with disaster survivors to support disaster recovery centers to sharing valuable disaster preparedness and mitigation information with the public. Scenario describes what the first FEMA Corps class has accomplished so far, as well as where they'll be going next. Yesterday, we welcomed 231 energetic members into the first ever FEMA Corps class. The members just finished off their first month of training with our partners at the Corporation for National and Community Service, or the CNCS, and are one step closer to working in the field on disaster response and recovery. They will now head to FEMA's Center for Domestic Preparedness to spend the next 2 weeks training in their FEMA position-specific roles. Once they complete both the CNCS and FEMA training, these 231 dedicated FEMA Corps members will be qualified to work in one of the variety of disaster-related roles, ranging from community relations to disaster recovery center report or support. And here it says a standing army. Unlike local disaster response teams who are volunteers, training periodically and only showing up when there's a disaster, the FEMA Corps will be paid full-time. That's interesting. I'll put a period and then a small. But anyway, their punctuation was wrong. Sorry. Paid full-time. Standing Army of Government Youth. FEMA Deputy Administrator Serino goes on to explain. The new members, who range in age from 18 to 24 years old, will contribute to a dedicated, trained, and reliable disaster workforce by working full-time for 10 months on the federal disaster response and recovery efforts. In closing his announcement of the first graduating class of FEMA Corps youth, Serena describes his and the agency's vision of the future, one where, quote, FEMA Corps sets the foundation for a new generation of emergency managers. DHS arms itself. As we detailed in the August 28 White House press article, quote, History of DHS Ammunition Purchases, federal emergency management agencies are looking more and more like a military army every day. The federal government's procurement website actually lists DHS requests for bids to supply with its ammunition and military weaponry. All the orders listed in the above article include the orders for hundreds of millions of rounds of ammunition, are publicly available at http://www.fbo.gov. one look at the chart of DSSC ammunition purchases over the past decade reveals a drastic spike in orders of bullets recently, totaling in the billions of rounds. Other charts available online show a similar drastic spike in the purchases and of accompanying weaponry by the Department of Homeland Security. What is the federal government preparing for? Why does it feel it needs any army of brainwashed, millions of guns, thousands of armored fighting vehicles, and literally billions of rounds of ammunition just to provide relief to the American people during a natural disaster? Any historian will tell you it sounds more like the arming of the Hitler Youth than any army of first responders fighting forest fires and hurricanes. End of article.
I am fired up. I feel safer, don't you?
And, me too. But at this point, we do have another caller in, and I believe this is Rex from the Rex and Tech Show, where folks can find on Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday evenings, and Rex will give the rest of the details, like times and topics. So without further ado, I will be letting in Rex. Rex, your mic is live.
Hey, guys. That was an interesting article.
Rex.
That was a very interesting little article. I can
blown up so I could see the screen, so sometimes it's a little hard to read, but go on.
I could only say I'm shocked and surprised, and I had no idea this was happening. Why would they need an army? I think it's because what they're doing is wrong, and enough people are going to wake up soon, and if you don't have an army, you lose that fight, and they don't intend to lose, which is why fascist movements are always youth movements, because unfortunately when you're young, you're dumb and easily manipulated. And that's precisely why Mussolini did that. That's why Hitler did that. That's why Stalin did that. That's why Mao did that. And they're doing it again. And we're sitting back here wondering who's going to win, Romney or Obama, as opposed to looking at the real problem, which is a standing, invisible government that operates behind the scenes and buys our politicians. Wake up, people. Wake up.
Yeah, I find it interesting. You know, I know there was all kinds of rioting and things of that nature down in Louisiana with Hurricane Katrina going on down there. But, I mean, having armored vehicles, and I'm wondering if there's going to be some kind of boot camp or some kind of military training, which I don't remember hearing the article or reading the article saying anything like that. But if they're going to be arming these 18 to 24-year-olds, would they not want them to be trained in these weapons? You know, I would presume that they would, but the article doesn't mention anything of it. Unless they're just going to say, "Hey, guys, I know you've never shot one of these things before, but here."
Never underestimate the power of angry youth to use weapons to their full effectiveness without training.
Yep, understood. Yeah, well, I mean, we've I don't know of all those incidences we've heard of course, they get a lot of time on the news of younger folks. Of course, we all know there's an agenda behind it of younger folks using, you know, weapons such as those to do horrendous acts. So.
Well, I mean, look at what they do in Africa.
Regardless of that, here's the bottom line. We're not supposed to have standing armies in this country.
True, Rex.
You know? I'm sorry, Rex, I stepped on you.
No, that's fine. I'm getting used to it because apparently there's a FEMA camp with my name on it.
I'm sure there is.
Well, I think the reason for this is, look, let's be clear about it. A large swath of people is going to go along with this no matter who's in charge, whether it's Romney or Obama. And I got to say, looking at the propaganda today, it looks like it just might be Romney. Nothing will change because he'll have all of this stuff in place and it belongs to him then and he will use it. But I believe that the purpose is for those who resist what is happening. For example, Catholics and other Christians who refuse to go along with the contraception mandate, or people who do not want to have their medical and financial records encoded in an RFID chip. Things, you know, people who don't want to give up their, quote, registered guns, or maybe their gold, or are accused of hoarding food or anything like that, those will be the ones that will be targeted because you got to go along to get along. And the question is, are you going to be Patrick Henry, or are you going to be the Austrians? The Austrians, as Chris has pointed out, invited Hitler to come and be their dictator. And Patrick Henry stood up and said, give me liberty or give me death.
Scary stuff.
I'm not as much of a historian as, of course, a lot of the guys here on the panel, but weren't there a lot of Austrians that did resist the Nazi takeover or the German takeover?
Yeah, they were shipped off to concentration camps. I'm sure you've seen the movie The Sound of Music, right?
That's where I've got that from. that's one of my favorite movies.
Now, besides the fact that it's a musical and all that stuff, it's actually the Von Trapp family is a real family, and that is essentially a true story.
They are. Exactly.
So, it did in fact happen. So I don't think it's just, you know, I Feel Pretty or whatever the song, the Do Re Mi or whatever, you know, but it's a real story. and it has happened, but these are the kinds
pretty.
Of things that...
I hate to correct you real quick, Rex. I Feel Pretty is not on the movie. Go ahead.
Okay. Maybe that's another musical. I don't know. Well, I'm not much of a musical aficionado.
I want to throw out something about Austria's history pre-World War II. The Nazi Party was actually growing quite a bit politically in the European countries, and Austria had a very strong Nazi Party before Adolf Hitler went really bad. And I think it was in 36, Hitler took power, I think, in 31 or 32. And in 36,
32.
The question, it was 32? Anyway, so in 36, the Nazi Party of Austria was really wanting to melt back into Nazi Germany. That was their political move and their agenda. And yes, Rex, you're correct. You know, some of the Austrians actually invited Hitler in. So the Chancellor of Austria... knew this isn't good. Should we go? So he put a vote to the people the day before the election. The Nazis showed up, so they really couldn't vote on it.
Mm-hmm.
It was history channel. I'm like, oh my gosh, the ultimate way to stop an election is invade.
Yep, very true. And just in case everybody forgets, because we're always told that the Nazis were extreme right wingers. The NSDAP, which is basically the National Socialist German Workers' Party, are socialists. So just bear that in mind. It is not an extreme right-wing movement at all. It is clearly on the left. They are socialists. Now, the reason people think they're on the right is because they would kill communists. And, you know, again, the only difference between communists and socialists is communists believe in the abolition of private property and socialists believe in the public management of private property. It's a distinction without a difference, but people have killed each other over it. But don't confuse the fact that communists and socialists don't always get along with the fact that the Nazis are on the right in any way. So that's what they're doing here, and if everybody understands the true nature of it, socialism, communism, whatever other kind of ism you can come up with, they all are technically, in our modern parlance, corporatism, and it is where a few financiers and corporation owners basically own the government and use it to benefit them and their profits at the expense of everybody else. So as long as you're a good consumer and you don't ruffle the feathers, you'll be allowed to go along and get along, but that's not really very American, is it?
But what is America today?
Not today. I'm talking about 1776 Americans. That's who we're supposed to be, isn't it? I mean, if they're timeless principles and we're conservatives, which means we're conservating these timeless principles, they don't change just because it happens to be the 21st century.
Yep. Wow.
Well, as I mentioned last night, it's a salad, but America's a salad bowl.
It's more like a salad bar.
Salad bar.
Everything's kind of segregated.
It's a very good way. Well, that's the thing. It's a salad bar, and you get a lot of people who go there, and it's all you can eat.
Mm-hmm. Until you run out of other people's food to eat, to paraphrase Margaret Thatcher.
or other people's bodies, like when Stalin was murdering people.
Well, yeah. But the good thing is that none of this actually has to happen. And I think that it's easy to get afraid of this stuff, and there's a difference between talking about it to be aware of it and talking about it to be afraid of it, because the fact is that as important as the Constitution is, it isn't really what you fight for. That's just the codification of over 2,000 years of Western tradition. And there's another Constitution, and that's the one written in our hearts. Unfortunately, we haven't passed it on to our children. And when I say children, I'm basically talking about anybody under the age of 40. It's time to reignite that, because it is something that everybody is in touch with. You can just get conditioned out of it. And as long as you have that in your heart and you stand up, the idea of the government only governing with the consent of those who are governed is not necessarily a new American idea. It is always true. Every dictator and every despot always had to get the consent of the people, even through fear, but they had to give their consent, because the masses can always overthrow a small oligarchy. So really, it's a prison for your mind. And as long as you're willing to go along and say, well, you know, this isn't so bad, an RFID chip, that'll make it kind of convenient, I won't have to carry a wallet around with me, then you're part of the problem. If you stand up and say, no, I'm not doing that, I want cash, and I want cash that's from the U.S. Treasury, not from some private bank that has a monopoly privilege, then you stand up. And if enough of us stand up, then we win.
I just got an article that came up in chat, AmeriCorps, NCC, you know, National Civilian Community Corps. And as you read down through the article, it goes, AmeriCorps-NCC-FEMA partnership to strengthen the nation's disaster response capacity. The Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Corporation for National Community Service have established a FEMA-developed unit of 1,600 Service Corps members within the AmeriCorps National Civilian Community Corps. I'm feeling safer.
Yeah. Just remember something. We've been talking about the Nazis. The Nazi Party really started out in the early 1900s, following the social and cultural breakdown of Germany in the late 1800s. And it wasn't until, you know, the 30s that Hitler rose to, well, maybe earlier, but, you know, before it rose to prominence. Some of us think that the Nazis just stormed on the scene in 1939 and started World War II. It took them a long time to make the inroads. And if you think about the progressives really taking over the Democratic Party in 68 and now infiltrating the Republican Party, then you can kind of see the same pattern. So it isn't necessarily that we're at the absolute end. We're at the end of the U.S. dollar, but we're not necessarily at the end of the United States. It's really up to us. Which, you know, which America do you want to live in?
Hey, I want to ask Chris, did you say there was a corporation in that name of some of these brown shirts?
Wait, you were breaking up. What was that?
Did you actually read that the Corporation on Security, or what was the word corporation in what you read?
No, first you have the, you know, the new little FEMA military disaster relief group, and the article I just read was the AmeriCorps. AmeriCorps group, which is tied, is now been joined up with the FEMA group under the umbrella of disaster relief work. So it's got, you know, it's expanding very rapidly, and these things are being tied together.
Well, that's interesting. If you find the word corporation, let me know as soon as possible. There's some good news.
Well,
about
AmeriCorps is an old terminology.
Yeah, that's true. Well, there is an interesting story, I think. As an engineer, I do elevation certificates, and the forms used to be not FEMA. Yeah, it actually was FEMA. All right. FEMA and used to be NOAA, FEMA, NOAA, they're all related under the same umbrella. Well, elevation certificates, or how high is the 100-year storm going to be? Okay, now that we know that, we can charge you an insurance rate, whatever. Okay, you just engineer, you just, it's kind of boring stuff, you fill out a form. Well, they changed the forms now, and on top of it says Department of Homeland Security. I'm like, what? Are you serious? This guy's house may or may not flood. Is none of your business? Oh, and that's right. Please attach a picture of the house. What? You want me? And they didn't require that when it was just FEMA. But now, under the Department of Homeland Security, it became the umbrella under FEMA, NOAA, blah, blah, blah. So you want a picture of my client's house. Okay, knock, knock, yeah, client. Hey, this form requires me to take pictures of your house, and I just want to let you know that the Department of Homeland Security is going to have a picture of your house. Is that okay? And they really like pictures from, like, several sites. So I'm like, what? Maybe I should just one picture? And some clients don't have a problem with it. I said, do you know who the Department of Homeland Security is? I mean, it's your choice. I kind of have this professional ethical obligation to tell you the government's going to have a picture of your house on file if you're in a flood zone.
They've and already got a picture of their house.
Google's been doing it.
Google Earth.
but not close-ups. So it's just like, geez.
I don't know. Mine's pretty detailed. Yeah. My house is pretty damn detailed. And actually, you can pan and go down your street and come in from different angles, mm-hmm. and it's pretty freaking detailed.
I just brought up the leaves on my trees. Yeah, I just brought up Google, and I can see your bald spot.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean the pictures on Google Earth of my property are pretty damn detailed.
Yeah, I've seen them. They're pretty detailed. Yeah.
Well, we live in a surveillance world. It's the question is, what do you do with that surveillance, and who do you trust with it?
Well, and I was going to throw this in there. Remember, this all started under a Republican for your safety and security.
Well, at this time, gentlemen, we have another gentleman to bring into the show tonight, and we know him getting to know pretty well here, and that is Gunny, as he calls himself in the chat. Gunny is in the house, and I will open up his mic, and gentlemen, be prepared.
Have you heard our conversation?
Good evening, Gunny. Thanks for coming in. How are you doing tonight?
Man, I'm telling you.
Have you heard?
Have I heard? Well, I just
got... Yeah, what we were just talking about the new FEMA military, young corps.
No, I hadn't heard that one.
Oh, yeah. That's what we're talking about.
Well, I do have some good news. You might have heard this, may not have, Randy, but I spoke with Mr. Jim Clymer tonight. And he will be coming in on Monday on Bard's Logic to go over the questions from the vice presidential debate, and he will be answering those on Monday night on the October 22nd.
Outstanding. Well, I got two comments real quickly that have nothing to do with anything pretty much other than your one comment. You called me a gentleman, and, Gunny in the house is because I'm a retired gunnery sergeant. Don't ever call me sir. I work for a living, that kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? So, just before coming in, I just saw an article. Guess who just endorsed Romney? Anybody see this?
Oh, my God. No.
Ross Perot.
Oh, yeah,
I saw that.
You've got to be kidding me.
Yep.
Businessman to businessman, I guess.
Well,
I don't think so.
Here's the thing. You know, obviously, number one, it really goes to show where he's always been. You know, he's, what, a rich billionaire? You don't think he's a part of this globalist system here, you know? And, when people say, well, you know, if Ross Perot can't win, you sure don't have a chance. Well, I got to tell you, I think he accomplished what he set out to accomplish. When you look at exactly what happened, how it happened, and all of that, you know, here's a guy that, you know, multi-billionaire. He went out and rescued an American citizen. Think about this. He had his own little military thing going on. He was in the chopper when they rescued that that American from another country. I mean, you know, he could have his own army. And so, you know, he's running for president as a the Reform Party presidential candidate. And, you know, in the midst of that, he drops out with the excuse, well, there's apparently somebody threatening to expose my my daughter has some nude pictures or some compromising pictures or something about my daughter, and she's about to get married, and we just don't need that. And, you know, come to find out that was all a fake, too. But here's the thing. How's a billionaire that goes out and rescues an American citizen from another country, has the power to have his own little army, and is somehow intimidated by somebody threatening to post fake pictures of his daughter? Really? Does anybody really swallow that? And then,
well, is that the real threat?
Now that you put it that way.
Well, yeah, is that, well, the real threat, though, or was that just a story?
That was just a story. Okay, my opinion, I have no, you know, here's what he told me, okay? I don't have any of that, but let's take a look at the facts. He drops out of the race with this excuse. He drops out for about a month. Now, remember, when he drops out, he's almost at 40% in the polls, okay? He's beaten all of them. Why would this guy drop out who's a billionaire who could take on the system? He could hire an army of private eyes and investigators, find out where this is at, and take them out. You think this guy was really afraid? So he drops out with this excuse, waits for about 30 days, and then says, you know what? I guess I'm going to go ahead and get back in this race here. And then he gets back into the race. Now he's only polling about 20%, and as you know, didn't win and basically was a spoiler for Clinton. Now I got to ask you, was that probably a realistic goal when he's polling 40%, I don't think the guy believed he was ever going to poll 40%. I think that just tells you one thing, that Americans were looking for hope and looking for a new answer. Here's a guy who comes on board polling 40%. I believe if he'd have stayed in the race, he would have been the president. He would have been elected, but I don't think that was his intent, because when he saw he was polling so high, he drops out of the race. And so now this is just this endorsement of Romney just basically for me confirms everything that I've ever said about who this guy is. If he really believed in what he was doing with the Reform Party, number one, wouldn't he still be doing it?
Those who have much.
Good point. That's right. That's one thing. Right, and that's why when Donald Trump endorsed, you know, that's, you know, I wasn't surprised when Donald Trump endorsed Mitt Romney. They're like, oh my gosh, he was so behind, you know, Newt Gingrich, and now he's, you know, endorsing Mitt Romney. I'm like, really, really, birds of a feather. You know, you've heard the phrase, right? I mean, I can't believe people are so shocked that, you know, Donald Trump endorsed Romney.
Exactly. I mean, you know, when you start looking at, you know, just taking a look at the facts, you know, forget all the rhetoric. Just look at the facts of what happened and what's continuing to happen, and it writes a story. I think that's one of the things that Chris is working on, you know, a timeline that just simply says, here are the facts. The heck with all the rhetoric. But here is what happened. Here's the timeline. And look how these pieces of the puzzle fit so neatly together.
I've been depressed for 3 days working on this. Not that I get depressed, but you know what I'm saying? Just a dark.
Did you look at the assassination of General Patton?
Yeah, no
and,
kidding.
And the amazing stellar rise in the ranks of Dwight D. Eisenhower?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Look, yeah, the fact is that I was going to say there are rich and powerful men who have convictions, but they become bigger targets because they're prominent. And if there's something that they're afraid of, how scary must it be?
Well, hey, help me out here. Wasn't Ross Perot that guy that kept having this line with that raspy voice? Do you hear that sucking sound? That's the sound of a scuttlebutt. Is that the guy?
He was right about the sucking sound. That sucking sound is Mitt Romney.
Well, I also thought
Mitt Romney from Mexico?
All those charts.
Mitt Romney's from Mexico, right? So he's the giant sucking sound from Mexico.
Well, I tell you, though, that on some of the issues where he was interviewed on some of the issues, I'm like, wow, I agree with that. But when I look at the facts of what happened, I'm like, okay, yeah, you just had insider perspective on that particular topic. You didn't have a real strong desire to see anything, any corrective action being taken place.
We may never know.
Wow. Well,
that's just going through my mind. Yeah. Hard to say. You know, and I'm not trying to counter you, Randy. I'm just saying some stuff, like I say this all the time, that anything like what's going on with, you know, I've often asked this question is, you know, what's Johnson's play going to be after the election? You know, is he a permanent libertarian or is he going to roll back to the GOP? We don't know. But those things will reveal themselves pretty quickly. And there's other questions I have about other people that we've investigated or researched. To me, it's more investigation. But you know, with the Perot thing, we just don't have the information that we have that we can get at our fingertips today. So it's hard to say what really went on. And what it really means. That's the problem with history. You know, we don't have that instant access to information like we do now. You know, people make a move and we get it.
Yeah, you're right, Chris. And the only real reason why I bring this up is because having been in this fight for 10 years now, the fact is every cycle, well, if Ross Perot can't do it, you can't do it. And, you know, when I'm looking at what happened there, I'm really saying, you know, I think Ross Perot could have done it if he really wanted to have done it. And so, you know, I fight this battle all the time about, you know, the objective nature of what happened there because people try to throw that in our face so often. And so, you know, on the one hand, yeah, I am looking for something to confirm my beliefs. There's no doubt about it, and so I'm a little biased on this. But, you know, the fact is you're exactly right. Somebody proved to me otherwise, you know. The facts aren't there. So, you know, we're kind of left to kind of dangle a little bit. But at the same time, you know, I use this information to say, look, it probably wasn't all that you think it was.
Right.
It never is.
That I do believe.
It never is.
It never is. Hey, I wanted to throw out a little comment here. Since Ross Perot has now endorsed the Romulan, it'll be Ross Perot talking about Ross Perot. Do you hear that giant sucking midget? He just endorsed Mitt Romney.
And Kelly, if you would just do us all a favor and call Obama by your pet name, I'd really appreciate that. Ubu-boo?
It cracks me up every time I hear you say that. Thank you.
Sorry, I had to. It cracks me up every time I hear him call him that.
But I want to comment on something Randy
said.
People are telling him, well, if Ross Perot couldn't do it, what makes you think you can do it? Well, Ross Perot was never able to do it. Obama is never able to do it. Romney is never able to do it. Assuming that the votes are actually counted, it's always us who does it. Who do you go along with? Who do you go along with? What do you stand for? Are you willing to compromise your principles for a party? Are you willing to let fear of, you know, one guy allow you to run into the arms of another that's just as bad? Who are you? Because it's your, you know, responsibility. It's your power. And if it goes wrong, it's your fault.
Good point.
Well, you just threw a wet blanket on things.
Yeah, I tell you what, he put out the fire. No, I'm just kidding. You've got so many folks out there, you know, and I call them the unreality reality shows. you know, just, you know, getting themselves inundated with all of those. You know, they come home. I mean, in part, I understand, you know, you come home from a long day, long days at work, and you want to come home and relax and, you know, forget about work for a while or forget about, you know, the hardships for a while and sit in front of a TV. And, I mean, yeah, who really wants to, I guess there's a few of us who really want to go dig, you know, right into politics right when we get home from work, but, you know, or a few hours afterwards. But for the most part, you know, I mean, in a way, I can understand, but we're not in a place now in America where I think we can afford that luxury of just being able to come home after a day's work and then just sit for the TV and not get informed and not work towards getting things better into maybe where there can never be a place where, you know, that might be, you know, you can relax more, but now's not the time to do it.
But isn't it possible that those people watching the unreality reality TV might actually be intuitively more on point than those people watching the unreality reality news? I mean, let's face it, if you don't know anything, you might get it right, but if you're faced with conditioning to give you the false sense of choice, then you can't get it right.
Well, that's why instead of being in front of unreality reality show, they should come to, you know, Constitutional Conservatives Unite, Bard's Logic, Rex and Tax, you know, Constitutionally Correct. They just come to listen to those shows other than watching, whatever they have on TV now, Dancing with the Stars or what have you.
Just remember, reality is for those. I was just going to say, reality is for those who cannot do drugs. Just remember that.
Well, you know, Robert, Robert, I never really shared with you my secret why I keep listening to your show and how I can handle it. It's because I got my tinfoil hat on.
Yep. Everybody should be wearing one. We're still shipping them through December 21st. Get yours now. They ship flat, some assembly required.
And I'm telling you, if you don't have your tinfoil hat lined with lead, they're still able to get some of those gamma rays in there, so be careful.
And on the Coalition of Freedom, there are a couple of videos on how to actually assemble the tinfoil hat. So
yeah.
You might want to dig those up.
Oh, that's right. I did post some, didn't I? Oh, my God.
I must admit that mine's all askew and everything, and I think it's missing some spots, so I might have to get these instructions back out.
Well, I got to get the antenna up there. Make sure your antenna is about.
No, don't fall for that ploy. The antenna becomes a receiver, and they pump that stuff
exactly
right into your brain. You want the one without the antenna. The antenna one is the
exactly
one the government put out.
Exactly. Well,
okay.
Well, guys, I won't use the term gentleman because I think that might offend a few of you. So we're digressing. That's okay. You need to digress sometimes. I do that myself. But we've got 7 minutes left, and we've got five folks, excluding me, on the line. So if anyone wants, give everybody about a minute to close out on what they'd like to say for the evening, go ahead. We will start with Chris. I'll just go down the line here. We'll have Kelly and then Chris, and then we have Rex and then Randy, and then I'll close things up.
Kelly.
I just went down the line on my switchboard. Go ahead, guys.
I'll go last. I got something breaking I want to share. So,
okay, well, we'll switch it up a little bit. Well, that leaves you, Chris.
What happened?
Well, any parting thoughts for this evening?
We can go into overtime. I mean, we haven't even talked about the Boy Scout thing article, and all
that's true.
Abuses,
that's true too.
And all the abuses that have been now being brought out, and Romney's love of making sure that we can have gays in the Scouts. That's going to be an interesting article. But outside of that. We covered everything except what we started on, which has been the topic of the night for the last four nights, and which is kind of cool because what it means is it's spontaneous. You know, there's things that are happening. There's things that we're discussing. There's things we're digging into. There's things that are revealing themselves. The conversations, I don't think we've had any wasted conversations. I think we've covered great material. I don't know what's going to happen November 6th. I've made this, you know, my prediction that the powers that be have told Obama to, you know, to roll over and pass it off to Romney because he offended some of their plans. The part that continually shocks me, and I'd love to get Rex on here one of these nights and really get into this financial thing of all these countries that are now using the China dollar to trade with, and including oil countries, and what that really means. And then you get these little sub articles like what we got with the, you know, the FEMA brown shirt Hitler youth. And I actually posted a picture of the really cool assault vehicles that you get to drive around that are disguised as vehicles that are supposed to help you in an emergency. And you just look at all these things pieced together and you think, I don't know if I wanted to know all this stuff. I sure as hell didn't know it a year ago.
Well, they do say ignorance is bliss, right?
What? I hear a jet.
So you've heard the term ignorance is bliss. Yeah, that's my jet. We're landing now. I've got to fly around every, you know, all over the place sometimes so that the black helicopters don't catch up with me. So that was my jet landing. I apologize, guys. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I'm done. Go ahead.
Go ahead, not goat head. There's no goat heads here, at least not yet.
Or gentlemen.
Okay, but then that, yes, that leaves that to you, Rex. Go ahead.
Okay. I have to mute my mic because that was actually a jet flying over my head, or a drone. You can never be sure. But as we get into this last couple of weeks of this electoral race, and you realize that it seems hopeless because, you know, one of the oligarchy twins is likely to win. Never give up hope, because it is possible somebody else wins if neither one of them gets 270. It's also possible that they decided to throw it to Romney to give you the impression that change is coming, when in fact it'll just be more of the same, and more of the same is terrible. But the fact is that this is your country, and you are a free, sovereign citizen of these United States. It is up to you to act like one, and don't do it alone. Tell others. Wake them up. Get them involved, because November 6th is not the end of the road. It's the first battle in a new war for freedom. And it may take a very long time. Some of us might not even live to see it actually roll back to where it should be. But this has been the battle in over 10,000 years of human civilization. And just count yourself privileged to be one of 330 million people out of a planet of 7 billion who gets to stand up here and draw the line. Don't give up, and always fight for liberty.
Amen.
And that leaves the floor to you, Randy.
How can I follow up?
Yeah, on 1 minute.
How can I follow up?
Indeed.
With that?
Man, indeed.
That was awesome, Rex. And indeed. One of those aspects of fighting the battle, though, is one of the reasons why I didn't get in here till late was I was on a conference call with the Young Constitutionalists. We are working to get that off the ground, and had two dynamic Joshuas on the call, and it looks like we've just got some awesome young leadership that is going to take off on this Young Constitutionalist. I'm excited about that. You know, you're absolutely right. I just created a group called Beyond the Election. And, you know, what is it going to take to move us forward? What is it going to take to start winning these battles? And we got to start developing the strategy, the plans. And we've already got people saying, hey, I'm going to run in the interim election on that particular group. So we're already starting to move forward. And so it's exciting. And like you, Rex, I am privileged and honored to be a part of this battle. We've got a legacy to leave. And like Sam always says, I've got grandchildren, and I love them to death, and I'm going to fight for every ounce of their future that I can fight for. God bless you all. Thanks.
Thank you, Randy. And, gentlemen, I that's just how I roll. just tell people, the guys, gentlemen. But anyway, if we want to stay on for an extended version,
yeah,
that's fine with me. But I'd like to thank everyone who came in tonight to listen live, whether it was on Blog Talk Radio or some of the other venues, such as the Bard's Logic Clinical Talk website. Listen there, or if you are listening to the archive and going to listen to the extended edition, go ahead. We welcome that, and thank you for listening further, too. So everyone have a good night, take care, and hope to see you again. So, gentlemen, we got about 13 seconds left on air, so we will start the extended edition pretty much right now. So whoever wants to chime in first, go ahead.
That'd be
Russ,
great.
This
get
is the extended edition.
get into the money game.
That's a fairly long topic that would require a whole show of its own, but in essence...
Oh, okay.
In essence, in simple terms, what we think of as money is in fact not money. It is debt. If you take out of your wallet any bill, it says right on there, Federal Reserve Note. The important thing to keep in mind is that the Federal Reserve is about as federal as Federal Express. It has no reserves, and a note means a promissory note. You owe them. And that's how our money has been working since 1913, and it will be 100 years under the watch of the next guy in the White House. But the fact is that the presidents don't really have much control over the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve has far more control over the president and the Congress. And if we want to restore liberty, that absolutely 100% entails economic liberty, and you cannot have economic liberty when your money is debt owed to a private bank. We have to restore sound money according to the Constitution, which is under congressional authority to value the coin, and it has to be backed by a legitimate commodity. And for over 6,000 years of human history, that commodity has been gold. And don't worry about the price of gold, because there is no such thing as the price of gold. Gold is the price. What we talk about is the fluctuation of the Federal Reserve note against gold. In ancient Rome, for an ounce of gold, you could have bought a very nice toga worthy of going into the Roman Senate. And today, for an ounce of gold, you can buy a very nice suit worthy of going into the U.S. Senate. So gold has not changed in value. It is just the other currencies that have fluctuated around it. The problem with this is that when you return to sound money, it tends to piss off the corporatists and the bankers, because Lincoln brought out U.S. Treasury money, and you know what happened to him. Kennedy did it, and then he said that he was going to expose something that is very serious and dark, and you know what happened to him. And in fact, Andrew Jackson is the one that said you will either have Jackson or the bank. And he killed the Second Bank of the United States, which is the precursor to the Federal Reserve. And he lived. But keep in mind, there were two assassination attempts on his life. And the last American president to question the Federal Reserve was Ronald Wilson Reagan. Someone was talking to him about inflation and such, and you know, he looked at a document that they had presented him, and he said, well, why do we even need a Federal Reserve? Well, he lived, but he was shot. Is it a coincidence? I doubt it. Is it a, quote, conspiracy? Perhaps. But those are the facts. You link the dots. But unless we return to sound money, you will never have economic freedom. If you do not have economic freedom, you will tend to do anything, including pledge allegiance to the current douchebag in the White House, because you are hungry, you have no shelter, you have no medical care, and you have no energy. So as long as the government controls those things, or I should say the corporations control those things through the government, then you are really not as free as you would like to think that you are. But the good news is that they cannot control your mind unless you let them. So step up, get on board, fight for liberty.
I have a question for you, Rex.
Sure.
Last night we were talking about Jackson and eliminating the Second Bank. and mm-hmm. I was doing some research on it. At mm-hmm. the time, the second bank was the largest corporation in the world, had the largest mm-hmm. holdings. I didn't
sure
know that.
Did.
And that's pretty freaky to think that a president could crush an institute that big. How did he pull that off?
Well, like I said, they tried to kill him twice. he just happens to be a resilient bastard, I guess. That's why they called him Old Hickory.
They called him Old Hickory? Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. But look, the fact is that a real president, in other words, someone who actually takes the office of chief executive of the executive branch of the federal government of these United States, will actually stand up to all enemies, foreign and domestic, of the people and the states and the Constitution. And one man can't do it alone, but if we have a man who is standing up for us and we stand with him, along with congressmen and senators who stand up for us and we stand with them, then we can start to do it. And it actually will require, I think at this stage, the states to step up and to really take a look at the way things are going and really take a look at the amendments that have brought us down this road, the 17th, the 16th, maybe even the 13th and 14th have to be reexamined. But it is time to really have the states step up and do what they did with the repeal of Prohibition and start nullifying unconstitutional, immoral, illicit, and illegal actions of the federal government. And that is going to require the will of the people. Yes, sir.
I was
going
to say, let me cut in right there, because I just interviewed just last week. In fact, I just got her interview out to Liberty Works Radio Network so that they can get it broadcast on their network. I did an interview with D.V. Kidd, who down in Texas is working mm-hmm. with the legislators down there to do exactly that, to nullify the 17th and the 16th Amendments. So mm-hmm. she's got the paperwork there for folks to go to her website, and it's dvkid.com, I think. And they can go on there and download the paperwork that people across the nation can take that, hand it over to their senators, to their state representatives, and say, here is what you need to move forward to nullify what the Federal Reserve or federal government is doing and violating the Constitution, and here's how you can nullify what's going on. So I think there's some great action there. She's also done a thing about a constitutional militia as well and dealing with that. So there's a lot of great information out there. It just goes along with exactly what you're talking about.
Quick question,
yep.
Randy. Which amendments is she actually working on again?
Well, I think the specific one lately is the 17th. I know she's been doing some work with the 16th, but I think specifically, the 17th, which for most people, if you're not familiar with it, that's the amendment that changed senators to being elected
right.
by popular vote rather than being elected through the state legislature. And there are some bills paperwork. I think that's one of the biggest ones that she's working on right now. There was a couple others, and I don't remember what they were specifically, but I know she has been working with the idea that all the states have to do is just not recognize the 16th Amendment, because she's gone out there with the evidence that the 16th Amendment was never properly ratified, so states don't have to recognize it.
And she's very correct about that. It wasn't properly ratified because there wasn't really a quorum to do so. And furthermore, it doesn't actually technically change the nature of the taxing authority of the United States federal government, because it is exactly what the Founding Fathers did not want to happen, is a direct tax on income. And here's the real screwy part about it is that we all think of income as inflows into our ledgers, but the fact is that your income is always an expense for whatever business, whether you're the business owner or whether you are the employee of a business, that's an expense on the business's ledger. And the only thing that can be taxed would be the profits of that business as opposed to your income. So there are some really sketchy things with that, and it really changes the nature of who you are, because think about all the stuff that you actually have to disclose to the federal government in order to file your income taxes, whereby a tariff or an excise or even a sales tax doesn't require any disclosure whatsoever. It just is basically a fee that you pay in order to keep government operations within the constitutional limits working. But the key thing is the 17th Amendment is very confusing to a lot of liberty-minded people because, well, what's wrong with popular election? Doesn't that empower the people? Well, you have to think of it in these terms. When you have popular elections for senators, it is basically the large population centers of a state that decide who the senators are, and the rest of the state is completely marginalized. When the state government elects the senators, it is your local delegate who has a say, and you have far more influence and say-so and an ear with your local state delegate than you do with your federal congressman or even your federal senator. So it actually gives you more power to have your state government elect your senator who represents the state in the federal government than it does to make it popular, which has basically just turned the Congress into, you know, 535 popularly elected fools as opposed to a House of popular will and a Senate of state will. And that's a very important part of the dual sovereignty and the balance of power, because we often forget about the vertical check. In school, they teach us about the horizontal checks and balances, but fail to mention the vertical checks and balances, which is vis-a-vis the states. And the wonderful thing about it is if your state government keeps electing crappy senators, you have the power to vote by getting up and leaving. For example, if you live in a state like Arizona and you don't like what they're doing there, you just go across the border to Texas and you go, hey, this is better for me. Randy, back to you.
Yeah, but here's the thing about the 17th Amendment, though, that people really don't really get a grasp. I've had this argument many times, especially here in the state of Illinois. You know, they say, but hold on, Randy. Are you sure you want to turn the election of these senators over to this corrupt state legislature that we have here in Illinois? Are you sure you want Michael Madigan to be able to select who these senators are because they are so corrupt and everything? And I said, well, take a look at it this way. What is the basis of all corruption? It's the love of money, right? Money. Money is the basis of all corruption. In this particular case, corruption works in our favor. Why? Because if the state legislatures were actually electing the senators representing the federal government, where would the state legislators tell this senator they want their money? They want it back here in the state. Not going to the federal government, going out to some country and all this other stuff, they would be saying, oh, wait a minute, we want that money in our own pockets back here in the state. But because the senators don't represent the states, then they are free to do with that money whatever they want. And they understood that when they passed the 17th Amendment, because understand in 1913 they passed theoretically, okay? The 16th Amendment was theoretically ratified in February of 1913. Well, then the 17th Amendment was theoretically ratified in April, just 2 months following that. They knew if they didn't change these senators and who they represented, that 16th Amendment would have been slaughtered and killed almost immediately as soon as they started seeing that money flowing out of their states, funding federal government, unconstitutional things. They said, oh, no way, that's coming back to the states. And so in this particular case, corruption actually works in our favor, and that's one of the brilliant things that our founding fathers recognized when they had this. And of course, it all revolved back in the Constitutional Convention, and it was known as the Great Compromise. What they didn't realize was that was no compromise. That was actually one of the most brilliant things they had done, because it put the power in the states to keep government more local and keep the money where it belongs within the states and in the power of the people. So if people understood, okay, if corruption works in our favor, just imagine if they actually elected some great senators too.
Mm-hmm.
Kelly, here, I want to throw out some thoughts. Why did they need the 17th Amendment? Well, because the 16th Amendment was passed. Why did they need the 16th Amendment passed? Well, because the Federal Reserve Act passed in 1913.
Mm-hmm. Right
and
on.
The trick was, the trick was they got it passed, the Federal Reserve Act. The banksters actually took out ads in the paper. We oppose this, reverse
mm-hmm.
psychology, because
mm-hmm.
people remember the horrifying experience of the 1830s when there was a horrifying depression because Jackson was opposing the banks, and the banksters, Nicholas Biddle, one inside banker, wrote, he is equal to Nero, who fiddled while Rome burned. And so they remember that, and the American people were deceived through different media channels of the day. The banker says, "We hate this. We don't want this." And so it got passed, and hence the creature came to America. And their plan all along, you know, with the 16th Amendment was, well, you know, only if you make $10,000 or more a year, which nobody did. I mean, a few millionaires, like, yeah, tax the rich, who cares, we won't get taxed. Well, then the banksters knew that they could inflate, and pretty soon everybody and their brother is making more than $10,000 a year, and everybody's going to follow the IRS, and yada, yada, yada. Now, here's a question for you. We all know Jackson beat the banksters, or at least we should know that Jackson beat the banksters of his day. One of the things that he did was he put the money, the federal government money, into the state banks. We have one now in North Dakota. It did well over this
mm-hmm.
recent mortgage debacle.
Mm-hmm.
But he put the money in the state banks out of the Bank of America. That was its name, the Federal Reserve, with the 20-year charter. And then in the middle of the second term, he said, done. I will not renew this. And he was impeached because the banksters were just angry. And they got the American people riled up, easily done, and they wrote their congressman and said, hey, impeach this guy. And so he got an impeachment. However, within, I think it was 5 years, the federal government had its books balanced. The money was doing a lot better. Everything was fine. And they actually rescinded his Jackson's impeachment. The Senate said, no, we're not impeaching him. He did what was right in the eyes of the Constitution. So, and he said, you know, by God, I will root them out, talking about the banksters. So he went to war with them. And by the way, I just put a graph on my website about the
mm-hmm.
beast of inflation. And guess what the all-time record low was of our national debt, thanks to the Founding Fathers? The all-time national low of our debt was only $33,000. Gee, I can
mm-hmm.
do that in a good year. All right, and the Founding Fathers knew that debt was just as much of a burden as conquest, subjugation by conquest. I can't remember. I think it was Benjamin Franklin that said that. And so the Founding Fathers whittled that debt down that they had incurred from the French and other nations that helped fund the Revolution. That graph number two, on it's the very, very last page. I'm getting responses from Chris and Robert already about these graphs. Well, if you look at these graphs, there's six of them, and these are called hockey stick curves, where you
mm-hmm.
see inflation. Okay, something significant happened in 1972.
Mm-hmm.
Something huge. Now these graphs resemble a hockey stick curve, but they start in 1972, and you see as things go to the right of this graph, the federal debt goes off the charts. The cost of food staples, eggs, bread, and I think it was milk, they go off the charts. Gasoline prices, they're pretty stable for quite some time. They start going up off the charts. Gold does this. Congressman salaries actually exceed the minimum wage. You can see those graphs. There's six graphs. I put an enormous amount of time in this when I was writing my book to explain that something happened in 72. It's what the powers that be want. It's called, it's called inflation. Keynesian theories, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so these graphs are there. I don't know, Robert and Christian, spread them around.
I posted them, yeah.
Okay, so when you see them, and Robert went, yikes! It's like, yeah, this is what's happening. It's no accident, all right? What's the price of gold today? I think it's like $1,743. I just looked it up on Monix. It did get to $1,780. All right?
Yep.
That's a gold price. We're right around $2,000 an ounce. I like that. I got a gold mining claim. Okay, fine. But what was the gold price in, say, 1970? Around $20 an ounce. What was it in 1940? Around $20 an ounce. What was it in about 1920? Around $20 an ounce. What was gold price in the 1880s? Around $20 an ounce. All the way through the 1800s. What was the gold price? Around $20 an ounce. Goodness, what's going on here? By law, the federal government fixed the legal price of gold at $20 an ounce. The price of silver was a dollar. You've heard the phrase, a man is worth a dollar a day, well, you get a silver coin. Of course, you could buy bread for 15 cents a loaf. And something happened that caused these hockey stick curves to cause enormous inflation. And whenever you have, and this is the powers that be of the planet, whenever you have massive inflation, you have eventually have a regime change.
Mm-hmm.
This is in their plan. This is what they wanted. I posted it, and this hockey stick curve is so. I've never seen one like it because I put specific historical events, and even the national debt, World War II. Our national debt is so low compared to now. It's just kind of a flat line. World War II is just a little bit of a blip compared to what happened after 1972. And so this every time I show this to somebody politically aware, they go, oh, my gosh, can I have a copy of this? I'm like, no, you're going to have to buy the book. I probably put 40-plus hours. I made this from scratch. But now I realize what's coming towards us with the QE3 and China's currency deals with other nations. I've got to get this out to the American people. So I just put it up on my website for all people to look at. HiddenForceBranch.com, just the very last tab is inflation. You can see these curves. And I want to ask people, go ahead, print them out, share them with people, make them aware, and hopefully they won't get afraid, but make them aware.
No, they'll be afraid. At first you're afraid, then you're pissed off, and then you get active. So if that's the stages they have to go through, then get them through them pretty quick because we don't have a lot of time.
So because of the regime change coming historically from what Keynesian has done to so many other nations.
Mm-hmm. That's how the Nazis got in power.
And this is a big and. I didn't know this until I talked to a World War II vet. It's how Nazis got into power. It's not how the Nazis got booted out of power.
Mm-hmm.
This Air Force vet from World War II told me that the American government was sending counterfeit rice marks in B-26 Marauders and dumping bags and bags of currency all over Germany. It crippled the war machine because the price went insane, and then surrounding countries providing resources just would no longer accept the Reichsmarks. So it was used to put them in power and take them out of power.
Yep. Well, it was used to put them in power, and then Hitler did something crazy. He started making his own money.
He started making his own money,
and the bankers got pissed off.
Didn't he also, right before he launched his strategy, he borrowed a whole crap load of money from all over the world, and then he just told everybody, I'm not paying you back?
I think he did something like that. But remember that that money always comes from the bankers, and many of those are German. Remember, these bankers we're talking about are not the guy that runs the local, you know, three branches in your neighborhood and actually serves the community. We're talking about transnational elites that have absolutely no allegiance to nation. They look at everybody as a cog in a machine of profit, and they don't relate to regular people, and they don't give two shits about you. And they don't care about nations, governments, anything. It's all about profit and control. And they do exist. It's not some kind of, you know, wacky conspiracy. It's not Moriarty or Hydra or Spectre or anything like that. It is just greedy men who know how to pull the levers of the monetary mechanism, and it gives them massive political power. And the only way you end it is to stand up to it and wake everybody else up.
Well, here's another way that you can make a difference. Jack can put the U.S. Treasury money into state banks. We can take our own money and go to your local credit union or your local small banks. The B of A, Bank of Apostasy, that's a national chain. That's money power, that's the banksters. Citibank's another one, Wells Fargo,
Chase.
Yeah.
Those are the four.
Yeah. By the way, they got huge bailouts. There was a real estate investor that told me one of the secrets during these times. He goes, well, I find out the mortgage that they own by one of the four we just named, and I know the federal government will bail them out. So I always lowball when they're in foreclosure. And they've been taking the bait.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they don't care. It didn't cost them anything.
Hey, Kelly. I'm looking at the graphs. Could you send each one of those to me as a JPEG file?
It happened again. Somebody wants a copy.
Well, Well, because what I'm thinking about doing, what I'm thinking about doing is on the archives, I could put a link so anyone visiting the archives, they can get a link to this page, and also in the where you normally see the icon of the show, you could put like five pictures in that create like a slideshow that people can look at while they are listening to the archive.
You can do it as a
right,
JPEG.
Yeah, that's why I said if I could get the charts as a JPEG.
It is a JPEG. Just save it.
You should be able to pull the image out, but I can send them to you, Robert. I'm hitting them because I'm working damn hard on these.
I'll separately. I can put each one so they can look each graph separately.
Gentlemen, I got to run, but it's been a good conversation. I appreciate it, and thank you for airing it, and thank you for getting this information out there.
Thank you much, Rex. And folks, you can hear Rex on his show, part of the Texan Rex Show, which is Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday. What time are those shows, Rex?
The shows are normally 10 p.m. Eastern, but we won't be airing again until Monday and Tuesday. That's the 22nd and 23rd, and we will be at 11 p.m. following the last of the duopoly presidential debates and then following the free and equal debate.
Okay, and as a reminder for the folks that they do not want to waste time watching the circus of the debate on Monday, they're more than welcome to come to Bard's Logic between 9 and 11 and listen to the vice presidential candidate from the Constitution Party, Jim Clymer, answer some questions from the vice president debate that was between Romney and Biden. I was calling him Biden. So that would be a good, or should I say good, alternative to the same old Romney and Obama debates. And that is Monday the 22nd.
Doesn't they have a candy bar after him? Mr. Good Bar?
Let me go back and help you, Robert. Click on each picture.
No, I'll just send them to you, Robert.
I mean, you can do that too.
Yeah, you can do that too.
Yeah, I mean, save.
I can work. Don't worry, Kelly. I can work on it. Oh, it's easy for me. I'll just put it in. I'll send it to a PM on Facebook. But yeah, anybody listening, just go ahead and copy it, print it out, show your friends, all six of them. And
well, here's
and then
the
question. The Federal Reserve is federal. I tell you what, $1,000. I do this to people. $1,000. You go to the blue section of the phone book. Yeah, that's government, U.S. government. You go there and you show me the federal phone number of the Federal Reserve. One person actually looked at it. It's not there. I said, that's right. And then tomorrow morning, call up the general information line of U.S. government. I've done this. You ask them, what is the phone number for the Federal Reserve? They will tell you, I can't give that out. It's a private corporation.
Yeah. Well, here's the question that I Rex left. I wanted to kind of pin him down on this, but him and I were chatting about that the Alex Jones, the last video that he did with this Lindsay guy, and this guy goes into a variety of things. One of the first things he talks about is QE3, which is essentially the federal government buying all of the loans in America, and that means that every piece of property in America will now be owned by the federal government. So if you have a loan on your house, they will own it. And that's one of our primary powers in this country is owning our own property. So that's what that's all about. And then that's the short version of the conversation. The video, when you watch it, you find yourself taking notes. There's so much information. But the other thing that he went into was China and Japan have just signed the largest trade deal in the history of the world, and they will work back and forth between each other on goods and services and products and whatever, and they're not going to use the U.S. dollar anymore. China and India, China and Russia, China and Brazil, China and South Africa. South Africa's China is their largest trade partner. All these deals – somebody's got some weird heavy noise going on in the background – all these weird deals, okay, across the world. You know, there's multiple countries, including the United Emirates States, and China has finally set up their system, and they just announced it, that any oil-producing country can now trade oil in the Chinese yuan, and yuan or yang or whatever you want to call it. And then the day after that, Russia announced that they are going to supply all the oil that China want, that China desires, all to be traded no longer in the U.S. dollar. So all these deals are in place already. It's all happened this year. And the thing is the guy was saying, as they you know, they outlined that, but then he got into the – it's actually called the end game. And he said that all of our debt with China – well, let me finish this part first. But the thing that he talked about that was startling, he said in 6 to 8 months, trillions of U.S. unused U.S. trade dollars are going to come crashing back to our shores because nobody's going to be using them out there. Because when you look at Brazil – healthy economy. India, that's a pretty big economy. Japan, Russia, China, the oil-producing countries. So when you add all that up, that's trillions and trillions of dollars of goods and services and oil, multiple trillions of dollars that are no longer going to be using the U.S. dollar. And he said that that means all that unused trillions of U.S. dollars are going to come back to America. And when that hits our shores, he said, QE nothing. I mean, you cannot print, the Fed cannot print enough money to get us out of this. We have serious issues. And the information's not, you know, it's not in the debates. It's not in the news. Nobody's going to talk about it. If they did, there'd be mass panic. But it is just, it's mind-boggling to think, you know, because America's had this unfettered control of the world economically as the trade dollar of the world since after the Second World War when they set this up. Well, the powers that be out there in the world are saying, enough, your time's over, and now we're gonna back this country. And of course, you know, none of this occurs without these bankers, you know, setting this up.
Dealing with China, if that's who they decide they're going to back, dealing with China, I think they're going to be playing a losing game. Because one thing I've said, you know, a million times, that there's always going to be, in my opinion, there's, you know, or at least for the foreseeable future, a world hegemonic power. And the other nations need to think about this really hard. Do they want that power to be the United States, or do they want that power to be China?
I just read you a list of countries that are already decided they're going to do business with China.
Well, then they'll have to find out how that's going to be to their own detriment.
I guess.
Say about that.
But are we going to be around to pick up the pieces? That's the question. You know, when you look at Japan, Russia, Brazil, Australia, India, the United Emirates, Africa, when you add up all those countries, that's a lot of power and a lot of money. And so, you know, how's that going to – I mean, the bottom line is you can't go to war if you don't have money. Wars are financed. So are we gonna launch a world war before it comes crashing down to fight for that right to be the dominant power?
Hegemonic power.
Hegemonic, it sounds like homogenized milk. Okay, the dominant power.
Think about it.
Good. I mean, this is real though. I mean we're looking at, you know, the first one, the China Japan, was done in February. What happened to Randy? Is he still around?
I'm here. I'm just listening
to us rant.
Enjoy the quiet from me for a change, huh?
Well, yeah, that was really weird. I thought you like fell off or something. But he's also, you know, but when you look, and he's and when he was talking about this, and this guy Lindsay's been doing this for 35 years. He's an ex-pastor, actually, and you can look him up and, you know, listen to his talks and stuff. But he's always had these inside connections with big top of the world oil company guys and bankers. And he's going, he's saying, I've never seen it like this. He said, they've never seen it like this. This is, he said, this is a planned event. When you look at, it's interesting because you look at Kelly's graphs and you look at this spike, it's just, it's off the page on each one of those graphs at where we're at. And that was actually, what, 2010, Kelly? You know, when you stop recording. And so where is the end game? I mean, we can set, you know, what Robert says is, yeah, that's a great concept, but everything's shifting. And those trillions of dollars are coming back to a broke nation that's been in a depression or a recession, arguably, you know, you could argue over that, for the last 5 or 6 years now.
Well, so, Kenny Kelly here, where it's heading is the Keynesian's theory bankrupts every country. G. Edward Griffin in the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, he called this out back in 94. A lot of the stuff we're going through right now, he called it out because he knew what the Federal Reserve was about. They're mostly socialists. And they knew, no, they know very clearly. It's on one of the graphs. Tenet number 4 of the Communist Manifesto, implement a central bank. And the central bank is what's going on in our country right now. And, oh, what do you know? The Federal Reserve, 100-year charter, is up for renewal in 2013 in August. And Ron Paul, finally, the champion of the Constitution, got the vote passed out of the Federal Reserve, which is H.R. 492, I think it was, or 432. 77% passed in the House of Representatives. Awesome. They took it to the Senate, Mr. Harry Reid. No, we're not going to vote on this until after the election. Yeah, that was kind of a nice political move. But it has to be, the approval has to be gained by the House of Representatives, and I doubt it's going to happen. And so, unless somehow some miracle happens, and of course the president has to sign it, as in all, you know, Senate, House, president, signature, it's law. And, well, you know, Obama would sign it, and the Romulan has been saying, yeah, I think Bernanke's doing a good job. Yep. Are you kidding? You're going to sign this bill if Congress passes it. No wonder Goldman Sachs and Citigroup, et cetera, have been funding both campaigns.
When I look at Romney's portfolio and his business style and the people he hangs with and runs with, the way he makes money, this is his game. I don't see anything in Romney's style of his walk through humanity that says he's a guy that's looking to break the power structures of the banks of the world. He's a guy that does business.
No, he's not. I mean, he's certainly not.
This is his game. I mean, he's tied to China. The death squad families? What, El Salvador? I mean, he's tied all over the world to all these entities that we all are bothered by as Americans. You know, he's tied all this stuff. You know, he even had money in Iranian oil fields through his Chinese connection. You know, these guys can set at the top of the world and take this thing off a cliff, reset it, build, and what Lindsay was talking about was a whole new currency that's controlled and backed by gold and silver. You know, you hear this every once in a while, about gold and silver being bought up by all these countries, especially China. And he said that the final thing that will define this new world economic system is a $3,000 per ounce gold. And he said right after everything is in place, he said the indebtedness of America, he said this has all been planned for years. This guy's been tracking this for 35 years. He said this is all planned. And our indebtedness to China, using China as a source, you know, to really put us under. And he said that right before it happens, because Alex asked him a very key question. What are the signals? You know, what are the things we need to be looking for? He said they've already passed. That was the part of the video when I was watching it where I went, wow. Because usually people who are predicting, you know, I've read books by economists and futurists and things like that, and they will give you these signs. He said they're already passed. All this stuff's come to pass. There are no more signs. He said the two things you're looking for is about a $3,000 gold, $75 silver, and then the interest rates will go up because that'll crash it. That'll crash it.
Well, then you hear these folks talk about all these things that can happen, predicting this and that or what have you. Some people put out their gloom and doom. Okay, well, one thing, I'm not saying here, but a lot of times you hear people just putting out what the problems are. Okay, well, what's the solution? Okay, if this is something that people say, this is what's coming down the pike, okay, or this is what could happen or what have you, well, then, let's get solutions. What do you do to combat this? What needs to be done to combat, what could be coming down the pipe?
I guess that's a good question. We could call China and say, start using the U.S. dollar again.
Well, but
this is the newest information out there, and I guess you could call him a whistleblower. But I don't know anybody talking about solutions. I've talked to Rex. Rex, the financial guy, about this. Just like my kids when they were young. I don't know.
Well, Kelly here, I think China and South Africa have something going. I have heard, and I would like to confirm.
Yeah, no, that was one of them.
Well, I have heard that they are going back to a gold standard currency. Now, I want to confirm that, but it would make sense. I did find, even on Fox News today, that I'm getting to the solution here. South Africa was number one in gold production. They've got a mine that goes down like 5 miles or something, gold mine. And then China is now number one in gold production. And so I hope they're switching to a gold standard currency. The solution is, if we do the same, the county I live in, they were cranking out one part of the county 20,000 ounces of gold a year. And with our modern technology, we can put another zero, maybe two zeros behind that, 200,000, 2 million ounces. I know mine is phenomenally productive, but that's another story. If we got back to the gold standard, it would be a very difficult transition. There's complexities to it with electronics and this and that and whatever, electronic bank accounts. If we got back to this, we would then be able to compete because our dollar will not be worthless anymore. It'll be gold for gold. That's one of the solutions. Notice that Romney, I watched the debates, the presidential debacles, I'm sorry, I mean debates, and Romney said, first day in office, I will declare China as a financial threat. What? Are you serious? Why are they become a threat? What are you talking about here? Is it because now they're potentially going to a gold standard? I don't know, but we will see. I believe this because that's what the powers that be in my graphs show. We are going to see horrific inflation.
Yeah, you can't. Even without your graphs, just 1 + 1 = 2. We've been doing this for so long. And here's the thing, Kelly. I know you're into gold mines. I live in Alaska, and we have a fault line that runs down through Southeast Alaska, and it's just, they're finding gold and silver and precious minerals all up and down. Of course, it's harder than hell to get it out, get the government to let them do it. But I just lost my train of thought. Isn't that cool?
You were talking about a fault. Was it your fault?
Yeah, it was. No, it
was his
fault. It was Romney's fault. But here's the thing. Oh, back to your solution.
Whatever he's munching on.
A donut. I'm starving. But of course
that's funny. I'll get you to say a donut.
Yeah, but of course that's. But here's the problem: is the people that are setting, according to Lindsay and according to other people I've talked to and read, the people who are doing this to us are the people who are in power of us. i.e. including the Fed and anybody they control in Congress. So if you want a solution, it would have been to elect Dr. Ron Paul or Newt Gingrich or Virgil Good would have been the solution. Because the only way this is going to change is if our elected officials quit being part of this plan. This is a plan. It's been around since, i.e., Randy, Kelly, Rex, anybody we've talked to about the 16th, 17th Amendment, and the Fed. This has been in motion for a long time. The problem is our elected officials are no longer doing what we hired them to do. Right, Randy?
Exactly. had to unmute. Actually, turn up the volume on my mic. But yeah, it's absolutely correct. And you know, one of the things I was going to make a comment on something that Rex had talked about. You know, he said that the fight that we are about to invest ourselves in following the election here. We may not see the fruition of what our fight is about in our lifetime. And, you know, we've got to start thinking about this in terms of longevity, in terms of putting things into place to start taking our country back and how it's going to play out for the long haul. Because, you know, the guys that instituted all this stuff, they, for the most part, the ones that met there in Jekyll Island, you know, they're all dead and gone. But they recognize they probably would be dead and gone when all this stuff started to come to fruition. So, you know, we've got to start taking on that perspective and that mindset ourselves. You know, certainly we want to see some short-term victories, but we got to start planning for the long-term victories here as well if we're ever going to, you know, provide for our posterity.
And that's not our rear-end posterity.
No, that's posterior.
That's posterior.
Well, I do want to challenge you.
As my mom would say, derriere.
Not to be too dark, Randy, but do we have that long? I mean, those graphs of the.
Well, that's why I said we've
got
to have some short-term victories here. We've got to start taking some battleground. But, you know, once we start taking the battleground, we got to understand the fight's not over. The war's not over. We might win a battle or two, but, you know, we got to start thinking in terms of the long haul and the war that is being waged upon us. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. We don't have long to start taking action. If we don't, then, you know, any attempt will be, you know, resistance is futile. You know, it's just not going to work. But we've got to start demonstrating some short-term victories. We got to start winning some battles here now and very, very soon if we are going to have any success for the long term. And I think that's what basically, you know, I was saying, you know, the guys that met at Jekyll Island, for instance, they had an immediate win there when they got the 16th, 17th, and the Federal Reserve all passed in the same year. So we've got to start thinking in terms of, yeah, we've got to have some immediate victories and battles won, but we've also got to understand we've got to start putting mechanisms in for the long haul, and that's why I talk about a multi-party system that can provide competition in the political arena. Yeah, I don't even know if I'm going to see that in my own lifetime. I'm praying that I do, and I'm going to fight every way to make sure that happens as immediately as possible, because I think that's one of the tools that we need to get set up for that process.
I heard one time one of the gentlemen that we Robert and I interviewed in your party, I heard something like was that you that said that there's 7,000 key elected positions in the country? Anybody know that number?
I thought it says between 7,000 and 9,000.
Yeah, you remember that conversation. I don't remember who that was. But and I'm not sure.
Let's just run a number check, 3,141 counties, okay? So if you count county, state, and federal, 3,141 times, say, let's see, a couple judges, supervisors, election clerk, DA, you're already at 10, times 3,141, that's 30,000, 31,000.
Well, he might have been talking about state house, senate.
Oh, okay.
Congress. I'm not sure what he was, what his reference point, you know, what he was saying.
Right. I don't even know if he elaborated on that. I don't recall.
Yeah. And it just was a number that I remember that sticking in my mind. And I was, it just was something that I was reflecting on with the numbers of down ballot people, the two top third parties are running, you know, and thinking about what number does it take, because critical mass always starts around 10%. So in other words, if you have
a chart, there you go.
You know what I'm saying? If you have a chart and we look at everything from, I don't know, maybe everything from a sheriff to governors to state houses to federal houses, I don't know. I don't know what you would include in the criteria. But, you know, you'd have to have some point of criteria, attorney generals in a state. I don't know. You know, that's something
Chris, let's run some quick numbers. Let's say that there's 100 positions at the state levels, say legislators, judge, governor, and blah, blah, blah. I'm just throwing a number of averages amongst 50 states. 100 elected positions times 50 states is 5,000. So
yeah,
if you start to see...
seven.
Okay, so seven might be more right. But then you start looking at the Libertarians and other third party. We're talking 500. I'm not sure if they're all state-level positions, though. But I like that 10% precipice point, if you will, the precipice point where change is going to begin.
Yeah, well, that is a critical mass number, and anything I've ever done organizationally has always been that point of critical mass. And that's true with technology. That's true with introduction of new products into the marketplace, you know, whether it was VCRs, whatever. But here's the thing. Libertarians have an existing 152 seats. Now, I don't know where those seats reside, you know, but it'd be interesting to have, because I'm a numbers guy. Numbers give people something to work towards. You know, that's just how the human beings are. When you say to people, we need to get 200 people elected in these positions around the country, and here's the people we need to back, you know, that it gives people a very clear number to work towards. Human beings are drawn that way if you set it up right. If you set up the platform and the strategy correctly. Because I'll tell you what, I don't think we got over 4 years. I have zero. I don't trust Obama, but I also know that Obama is bungling, which means he can be messing up this world domination, world economy, world order plan with his fumbling. But I trust Romney even less, and it's so hard to explain that to people why. But what I was saying earlier, when you look at everything he's done from how he set up his companies, I mean, when he ran Bain Capital, he was the sole owner, sole stockholder. I posted a video earlier, Romney Exposed, where somebody just kind of pitched all this Romney stuff together. I didn't get a chance to watch the whole video, but he even talked about his initial investors being the money that came out of El Salvador and the banks that were used. And these banks are tied to places where the cartels do their money laundering. I mean, just all of this stuff. They show this figure of a Romney, his average return for investors is 172%. And they threw the last guy in prison because he was giving back 10%. They figured he was doing something illegal. 172%.
That's,
you know,
crazy.
So the guy in the video is going, and he's piecing this stuff together, and he's going, okay, now you think that's freaky? Now let me show you this. And then he would go, okay, now let me put this on top of it, and let me expose these people to you that are part of Romney's class. So, I mean, you know, Romney, whatever. I mean, Romney's Romney. But I do not believe he has the heart and soul of American sovereignty in his mind. I do not. Do you?
Well, I believe he has interest.
No, I don't think so. I don't think he, you know. He's a corporatist.
I believe that Romney absolutely has the best interest of some people in his mind and in his heart. That would be his campaign contributors. That would be the corporations. That would be the money powers. He has absolutely some people's best interests in mind.
And I think Randy has either he's dropped off. I don't know if he got disconnected or if he moved on to Sammy's show or what's that?
Well, we freaked him out.
You freaked him out?
Yeah. I wanted to throw out some breaking news that I just discovered on Occupy Rigged Elections. Yeah, you can figure out who their bias is. But we had a conference call with these people. Yeah, they're liberals. Some of them really like Ron Paul. They wouldn't really openly say it to their buddies. But, yeah, a lot of them like Ron Paul. Anyway, they are absolutely adamant about the vote, whoever wins, and so is Watch the Vote, whom they're with. They just posted a breaking news story that in Virginia, a man from Pennsylvania works for a corporation under contract with the Republicans, was arrested by the sheriff because he was caught destroying voter registration ballots that had on the names Democrats. This happened in Florida. There is up to, 13 or 14 now. Francois, the analysis, told me about this. It was up to 10. I think it's 12 or 13 now. Investigation going on in Florida, Southern California. There just happened to be, 50,000 new Republicans in Southern California. The problem is they just happen to be really Democrats, but they're not Republicans. So what's happening is the Republicans are just desperate, I mean beyond desperate, to get their Romulan elected. So I'm beginning to I'm beginning to wonder if they are desperate for the banksters, and that's why, and the Federal Reserve getting renewed in 2013, just so they get wrong. I don't know what's going on, but there's a form of desperation and corruption I haven't seen in my life. I mean, I'm 46, but I have not seen this with the Republicans. I expected this out of the Democrats, the Acorn mess, but the Republicans? Somebody in Santa Cruz, I was in a radio talk show, and this guy called in, and he called the Republicans the repugnant ones. and they're pushing people out of the party.
Well, did you hear the article I posted about a week or 2 weeks ago on a guy that had a private company that his other company was being investigated for voter fraud, he was just currently got exposed because of his other company was being investigated, but he formed a new company for doing some stuff with the GOP, for voting work, getting out the vote kind of stuff. And then somebody exposed that, well, hold on, this guy's, is under investigation. And then the GOP gets up and goes, we do everything above board, so we're not going to use this guy anymore. And the guy's, being interviewed, and he's going, they asked me to form this other company to do this work for them because they didn't want to be associated with this other company I own.
Get this in front of a federal grand jury, and now. Jeez. And start issuing subpoenas, find out up the chain of command who the hell's doing this, just like Watergate boys and Nixon. I cannot figure out. It's one or the other with the Republicans. No, I did not say repugnant ones. The Republicans are so desperate right now that they have cheated all over the place. Are they so desperate because – are they committing corruption because they're so desperate because, A, they just don't want Obama in, or, B, is there something else driving it?
Well, when you listen to this video that I watched, and this guy Lindsay, he definitely has a part of it where he talks about Obama went off the reservation on these guys, on the powers that be, and they want him out of there because he changed the deal on them. And it has to do a little bit with just a variety of things, including what's going on in the Middle East, including the pipeline from Canada. He made some decisions that they did not like. They already figured out he was going to be a little bit of a liberal, a little bit of a Marxist maybe. But when he got in power, he started getting squirrely on him and started going off the reservation. And so they need him out of there so they can finish this in-game plan that they have. So I don't know which one's the most dangerous, Obama and his desires to do what he's doing, or Romney and being the next yes man for these people. I don't know.
Well, the,
I guarantee you, one last thing I'll say before you go on, I guarantee you, there's a war coming. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Well, one of the things that you don't do in either political party is offend the Jewish Hebrew voting bloc. A lot of liberal, the typical liberal Democrat Hebrews, New York area, that they're even, some of the columnists are writing, we don't like Obama anymore. What the heck? He's supporting, you know, the Muslims and the, and of course, they've wakened up to him. It's taken them, 4 years, but I was, after about 4 days, I figured out Obama. But, you know, that's the way it is. And so you don't offend this block. And the Hebrews have an enormous amount of political influence in our country. You know, sometimes that's a good thing, is, you know, the Israel Bible thing. But, this is what I'm seeing, too, is the powers that be aren't liking Obama. And watch his polls slipping. It's happening.
Mm-hmm. Well, he handed that first debate over. You know, he just...
Gentlemen?
He just...